It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We've got a great panel for you. Owen J.J. Stone, O-Doctor, he's always fun. He joins Tom Merritt from the Daily Tech News Show and Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. We're going to talk about drones. Jason's become a drone king. He's going to tell me about all the latest new drones. Apple and their new music plan, plus the new iPad Pro. I have it right here. And why did Amazon buy Whole Foods for all that money? We'll explain it next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 620, recorded Sunday, June 25th, 2017, from Key West to Key Largo. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe, expandable, yet easy-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobostore.com to learn more and use the code TWIT10 to save 10% off select Drobos, including the Drobo 5N2. And by Bombfell. Bombfell is an online personal styling service for men that helps find the right clothes for you. Get $25 off your first purchase at bombfell.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news with the best tech journalists I can find. And in on a beautiful summer afternoon at the end of June, that's actually not easy. But I'm very pleased that three of my favorite people consented to come in out of the sun, to come from the pool, and to join us. Tom Merritt is here from the Daily Tech News Show and Tech Republic.
Yeah, sometimes. I'm proud to sacrifice my vitamin D for this show.
Thank you. Doesn't look like you've been getting a lot of it, so.
It never does, does it?
It's the Pasty Boys show. Yes, it is. Hey, that'd be a good name for a boy band.
Yeah.
The Pasty Boys, we're here. And that's Jason Heiner. He lives in Louisville, but you'd never know it. He is the editor-in-chief of Tech Republic. He spends a lot of time indoors as well. Hey, Jason. Good to see you.
Hey, great to be here, as ever.
Clearly a Broadway fan. Whenever you broadcast from home, we see your Hamilton and your 1776 poster. Did you see 1776 on Broadway? You must have been too
young. No, I was too young, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. It's one of my favorites, though. Hamilton's the best show I've ever seen by far. 1776 is kind of a classic, you know. I watch it every year on 4th of July. I always watch it. You know? And then I end up singing the songs and annoying all of my friends and family and coworkers. And stuff. Yeah.
And finally, somebody who's clearly not been in the sun at all in ages, Owen J.J. Stone. Oh, Doctor!
I have a year-round tan. I don't need the sun. The sun doesn't need me.
He's in
his
featureless dark room that he's been adopted of late.
The bat cave.
Yeah.
Is how it was. Guess what I did for you, Uncle Leo?
What did you do, oh, Doctor?
I did two things for you. One's on my Instagram.
Okay.
The other thing is I have switched from Mac to PC for the first time in 12 years.
You did that for me?
I did. I did.
Why would you think I would want you to do that? I am an Apple lover, too.
Because look at your desktop. Look how you're looking down right now. What are you looking down at, Uncle Leo?
Woo! Surface Studio, baby.
There. Yeah, and I wanted that so bad, but it doesn't have the power that I need.
Yeah.
So yeah. My last post right there, that's for you.
Let me see. This is O-Doctor. He's going to show us. Oh, you got a Vive, baby.
That's a Vive.
You got a Vive boomerang.
Yeah, I'm going to test it out, play with it for a little bit.
You know what? You didn't do that for me. You did that for you.
Hey, look, I come on this show, I bash it all the time. People yell at me and tell me I don't like the future. And so I figured I might as well just give it a little test run. Now that other people have it threw up all over themselves in their rooms. So
did you see the most recent Silicon Valley? There they've got a fake Palmer Luckey. He's completely nerdy, and and he's a VR guru, and apparently completely a huckster. And at one point he walks through the office, and there's all these giant pictures of him in the same pose Palmer Luckey had on the cover of Newsweek, where he looks like a complete utter idiot doing his.
Oh yeah, jumping up in the air. Yeah. And all that. Yeah.
And but he turns out to be a complete huckster. Sells out to Hooli, which is the Google. But kind of be like selling out to Facebook. Anyway, there's one point where Richard, the star of the show, our nerdy entrepreneur, he says, I don't do VR. It makes me sick. And he's so sick. Anyway, worth seeing.
They told him it was going to be better. He still got sick anyway.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Nice to see all three of you. And I'll be interested in what your experiment with Windows. What did you get, Doctor?
I went back to my roots and I built... Nice. Ryzen 7, 1700X.
Oh, you went with the new AMD chip.
Man, this thing is a beast. I'm up here with my 32 gig RAM. I got my water cooling. It looks super sexy. It's so fast. Like, I render videos, and it's so fast compared to my MacBook Pro that I had. And, oh, my goodness, it's so fast. And Windows doesn't suck. My stuff's not – I just like it. I'm sad to say that I like it. I don't like that I like it. But I like Windows 10 a lot.
That's the thing to say is that Windows isn't as bad.
It's good for the first week. You know, great for the first week.
It goes
week.
Downhill fast. But no, I think that Windows has gotten better. It's a lukewarm endorsement, but it's about accurate. And frankly, as Mac OS has gotten worse, the distance between the two of them is decreased. And the main thing is, as you point out, you can get much better hardware now.
Yeah. And for the price that I paid, like, I ended up spending like $1,700. And if I wanted anything close to the power that I'm getting, Apple wants like $5,000, and it's outdated until I got to wait for the future of whatever. And then it'll be outdated by the time the future gets here. So, I mean, I was just done with it. And I use Creative Suite mostly anyway. So it's multi-platform, and the rendering on this thing, it just crushes.
I know
the stuff with the photo and the video that I'm doing. And I love it.
Go ahead, Leo.
I just, you know, as you know, I got back from vacation. By the way, thanks to Jason Calacanis and Jason Snell, who filled in for me while I was gone. And while I'm on vacation, Apple has its event and announces the iMac Pro. And I thought they were joking. I thought I'm being punked, because this is an iMac, a $5,000 iMac that they claim pros are going to want, even though it's an iMac. It's not like you can add 5 SATA hard drives and...
Yeah.
I mean,
that's no different than the Mac Pro, right? You can't really open that thing up.
You can't open that up either. And this starts at $5,000, although somebody imagined, because Apple hasn't put out any other prices, what it would take to upgrade this to the top of the line Xeon and everything. And they said it probably will top out around $17,000. And it's not as upgradable as for 1/10 the cost, what you build, Owen.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't go Intel because, again, for me, I didn't need to spend that money for what I needed to be doing. A lot of the work that I do now is like photography and video editing. So, like, again, just going from my iMac, and it was a 2014 iMac, rendering an hour-long video took me almost 40 minutes. I did it in 5 minutes on this machine.
Did you do research into what you give up when you go with the Ryzen as opposed to the Intel chip?
I did. I didn't get my Thunderbolt, some of the display ports.
I do like Thunderbolt, I must say.
Yeah, so there's certain, but the price difference was just so good. It's like I could spend $500 and get something that they want $1,500 for, and it's equivalent in speed. Like, you lose like maybe 1% or 2% on your rating, and it's like, why not? Especially since I was dipping my foot back in Windows. I'm not trying to spend $3,000 on something if I don't like Windows. Like, now I'm comfortable with it. So, you know what I mean? I feel okay about the money I spent and everything like that, so I'm happy.
I always tell go ahead.
I did the same thing. Sorry, I did the same thing. My son's really into video editing and computer animation and special effects work and that kind of thing. And I, you know, my wife is a photographer. She has the MacBook Pro, the newer one. My daughter has a Mac. I you know, have Macs at work and stuff. I use Windows 2 because at work we write about it a lot. But for my son, you know, it was going to cost crazy amount to get you know, a Mac, and also it just because it was before the recent bump. And so I did. I got him a Windows machine. I was like, look, this is just the way to go. You're going to get better performance.
It hurts, though, a little bit, doesn't it? It just hurts a little bit.
It does. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. Like, and Windows, the thing about Windows is so much better on a desktop than it is on a laptop.
Yes.
On a desktop where you don't have to worry about sleep and, you know, all of those kinds of things, Windows great. Windows does fine. And if you're on Creative Cloud all the time, like Owen said, and you spend all your time on that, it really is fine.
Photoshop and Lightroom are exactly the same. And we use Premiere, of course, for editing.
And Premiere, exactly.
And so we, you know, our editors are using Windows. They're using Windows 8. And they never leave. So it's, what's the difference?
You spend your whole time in the app. Where Windows really still struggles is on a laptop. I took one to China last year, and I did not want to bring any laptop, you know, that I cared anything about. And so I brought like this Samsung burner laptop with Windows. And the thing, it drove me, I yelled at this thing the whole week I was there because trying to get it out of sleep, I'd bring it out of sleep. It wouldn't wake up. I'd hit the power button. That would shut the whole thing down. I'd hit the power button. It would start back up. This was a daily occurrence because of the hardware software integration not being
that's
very good.
That's the risk of multiple hardware vendors, right? Because I've got a Surface Book, and that thing is a dream. I open it up look at it.
But
it
Tom, when did you
time.
Get your Surface Book? Did you get it a year ago or did you just recently?
Yeah, a year ago.
Because the power management was terrible for the first 8 months.
Power management was awful for a while. It's a little
remember
better
the hot,
now. It's
we call it
really
the hot,
top heavy.
The hot bag syndrome because it would somehow not sleep. And you would take it out of the bag and it'd be burning hot, and the battery would be depleted. Because
I never had that happen to me.
It happened to me every
single time. The fan would run all the time.
Yeah. And it's weird. The hinge is weird. If somebody could run and get me the, I just got the new Surface laptop. You don't have to, Luis. I'll go ahead if you want. It's in my office. One of our audience. Love our audience. I'll go get it. Yeah, it's in my office. That new Surface laptop with the fabric Alcantara. That's a little weird.
How's that feel?
Keyboard.
I'll show you. But I have to say, I decided, and this was, it's funny, we're all going through this kind of same thing. I decided to get a Lenovo second generation X1 Yoga, which I think these ThinkPads are pretty darn nice.
New HPs are really
and
nice.
And the EliteBooks are very nice. Toshiba, of all people, this new Portage, there's some really nice hardware. Yeah. And I think that the laptops are getting better. I agree kind of with what you say that Microsoft still has trouble for some reason with power. I think that's partly Intel's fault. I think that the Skylake was not had real power issues, but and somehow Microsoft does seem to have solved this. This is the Microsoft laptop. For those of you listening at home, I'll describe it. It's red, and it has unaccountably fabric on the top.
I don't know what were they thinking. That's not going to wear well. I know that
it comes
when
with
I first
a tiny Dyson.
That
you can.
I thought maybe like a flea comb or something. Who was it? Was it PC Magazine? God. They rubbed Cheetos into it? I couldn't bring myself to do this. I should, really.
Add that on the list of things to send me when you spill some juice on it.
You know what? Does anybody have any Cheetos we could rub into this?
Don't do that. Don't do that. I'm waiting for you to send it to me. I don't want a Cheeto laptop. Don't you do it. Because the internet has done it for you. Calm down.
Yeah, they have done it. And they said we couldn't get it out. We tried and tried, and it's just permanent Cheeto. The other problem with this, and it's not a bad laptop. It's very thin and light. It's all, you know, aluminum. And it does run this weird version of Windows 10S, which I'll talk about in a second. But iFixit said you can't get into it without tearing off this Alcantara fabric. And there's no way to remove it without destroying it. So it's unrepairable.
Sounds like an Apple product to me. We're used to that.
Yeah.
Used to that.
They're keeping up with Apple, aren't they?
Yeah.
But it's pretty. And when people see it, they go, oh, is that fabric on your...
I feel like it's for old people. Like it's a shag laptop.
It's like a shag laptop.
It's the 70s
it's
laptop.
It's a shag laptop.
That is the thing, right? It is marketed for people who don't want to repair their laptop, who don't want a full version of Windows. That's why Windows 10S is on there.
Yeah, although, as I learned playing with this, it's really Windows 10 Pro. It's not. All they they flipped a switch that doesn't let you install anything, which you can flip on 10 Pro, by the way, that won't let you install anything except from the App Store. And then they disabled the – there's no C prompt. I think this has to be the first Microsoft product in history not to have a DOS prompt, right?
That's sad.
And there's you can't put, you know, Linux subsystem on or anything. But it isn't more secure necessarily. In fact, who was it that was able to – was it ZDNet? Was able to put ransomware with jumping through some hoops that probably – you know,
needed some social engineering also.
You had to use, you had to hit the task manager, run Word as a administrator. But you were, they were able to use a Word macro to get ransomware on 10S. And I guess my point is because they had to put this the Win32 subsystem on here for Office, it's not anymore. I don't believe it'll end up being any more secure than Windows 10. So what are you giving up? You're giving up Chrome. You're giving up a decent email program. You're giving up all sorts of stuff because you can only use stuff from the Windows Store. And what are you getting? Very little. I mean, it protects the user.
Shag, baby.
Shag. It protects some users from accidentally installing things.
That's probably true.
Grandma can't go to Softpedia and download, you know, the Ask toolbar.
Right, and she'll be upset about that, but Grandpa won't be because Grandpa was the dumb one who didn't know to go to the Ask toolbar.
What was that horrible email
Grandma
program?
Grandma was always the savvy user.
Grandma used that horrible email program, remember, that would put dancing bears and stuff in your signatures, and what was that?
No, that was Grandpa.
Oh, it was Grandpa?
Grandma was running Thunderbird.
Thank you. Ace Detective, man. He's protecting us from ourselves. Thank you, Tom Merritt. I appreciate it.
I look at that keyboard and I think, you remember how like when quarters were cool? I know this is going back a long time. But you know how they would get like all rubbed really thin, like on your bottom, but where you sat, you know?
Oh, it is. It's like threadbare corduroy. That's exactly
That's what the hand rest is going to be. It's going to be like the butt on your corduroys, you know, when you were
in Incredimale. Out of Sinks reminding me.
There's a factory full of Microsoft employees wearing corduroy just to create these things.
But the good thing is, you know, I always name my laptops when I get them. I've named this one Alcantara. So it's got a, it came with its own name because that's the fake fabric they're using here, Alcantara.
It's definitely, they're going after Chromebook. I mean, I think by and large, it's not a crazy idea. I don't think the execution is terrific on that machine, but I think they're going in the right direction going after Chromebook because I've recommended at least half a dozen people in the past year get a Chromebook when they
what's
was
the
time
price
for them
on
to
that though?
This is expensive, but this is not the ultimate product. I think that Microsoft envisioned this is $12.99 as you see it here.
That's a hefty Chromebook.
There are some manufacturers doing $198 versions. So
yeah,
okay.
But it isn't as secure as Chromebook. It's not really Chromebook. Oh. And look at what's in the Windows App Store. It's not great stuff.
Yeah, it's bupkis.
It's bupkis. And you know what you get on a Chromebook that you don't get on Windows 10S? Chrome.
Kind of helps.
You have to use Edge on this.
I mean, if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem, for the people that are really bought into the Microsoft ecosystem, it's maybe a better thing for a Chromebook. If they're in Outlook, if they're really into Office 365, if you know Skype is their IM client and all of that, then maybe it's a better thing for them. And they're replacing a Windows laptop. These new like $200-$300 devices that are going to come out, I think it might be a better machine for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see anybody that I know that I'm going to recommend that or one of those machines instead of a Chromebook yet. I guess we'll see.
My opinion is you should only get Windows because you want to be in the broad, diverse application ecosystem that Windows offers. You want to do that variety of things. That's why you get an operating system like Windows. If you don't, then you should get a Chromebook. It doesn't make sense to get kind of a weird, stripped down, and perhaps not more secure version of Windows if you're not going to use the vast Windows ecosystem. If you're not going to take advantage of that, I don't get it.
Yeah, if you're somebody who needs to use Office, but you don't really want anything else.
But you can use Office on anything now. In fact, Office, the web version of Office runs on a Chromebook.
Yeah,
and it's
there's still issues though, especially with Excel spreadsheets and stuff. So.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a huge slice, mind you.
Yeah. You know what the cool thing about today is?
What's that?
One, we haven't even gotten to an article yet. And two, no one can talk to us about bashing and being Apple fanboys because we started this jump off about Windows. It wasn't even a story. Oh. We've been talking 15 minutes about Windows.
I can't win. I can't win, though, because then I get the emails saying, how dare you host a show called Mac Break Weekly if you're not in love with Apple? I don't understand it. And then somebody wrote me an email saying, actually, I think he wrote the company an email, not understanding that there's not much distinction. He wrote the company an email saying, don't let Leo take vacation when there's an Apple event. And, of course, Apple didn't tell us there was going to be an event until like a week before. So
yeah,
because
yeah.
they were going to introduce this $500. I don't know what Apple's doing anymore. Their vision board.
All right. Well, I want to defend them in a second. But first, I have to say, here's the one program you can't get on Windows 10S that you wish you could. The fabulous IncrediMail is still available, including animated email notifiers, email backgrounds, animations in your email, 3D effects. Come on, everybody, download it. This is the bane of my existence, IncrediMail. Actually, I shouldn't say that. This is the reason that I still have a radio show, because there's people who download this crap. And then they have to call me and saying, what happened?
It's incredible.
It's incredible.
It was so much fun.
it was so much fun that my computer blew up. All right. Actually, we should take a break. But I do have the new iPad here. And actually, I think that the new iPad is a stealth product from Apple. That there is something that more than just meets the eye here. It's not just an upgrade to the iPad. And it's a little more exciting than the iMac Pro for $5,000. But we will take a break and talk about that. Odakta is here. It's great to have you from IQMZ.com. That's his website. Follow him on Instagram, OHDOCTAH, and watch him throw up with his brand new Vive.
Man, that's not, I'm not letting that leak out anywhere.
It could leak out from a lot of places, actually.
You might get some extra views off of that.
You may be amazed where it leaks out. Virtual reality.
No. See, now you scare me.
You may be amazed at where it leaks out. Also with us, Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. He's editor-in-chief over there and nominally has a little bit to do with Tom Merritt's app picks, his five apps. Tom Merritt's here from the DailyTechNewsShow.com. Great to have all three of my good buddies on the show. It's a good way to come back. I have to say, our show today brought to you by something you can use, Odakta, with your new PC, your new Drobo. Wouldn't this be great if it were like a game show? I could say, Odakta, you've just won a brand new Drobo 5 and 2.
Everybody gets a Drobo.
Oh, man.
I'll clap it up. Drobos are sexy.
I'll take a Drobo.
Sexy is a good word. When these came out, they were a revolution. Drobo was started when its founder... He was running Raid, right? But he's running that Raid that you get, you know, the software Raid. And he thought, I'll never have a hard drive crash. His Raid failed, and he realized, you can't recover this. There's nothing you can do with this. I've lost my data. So he said, we could do a better job. They created Beyond Raid, which lets you easily add capacity to your live Drobo storage array. It has so many benefits over Raid, but all the redundancy benefits as well. And I've been using Drobo for years, both for speed, capacity, and redundancy. I have a Drobo Mini, for instance, I have attached to my iMac that gives me massive speed because it's Thunderbolt and it's got four SSDs in it. Plus, all the new Drobos now have these great little mSATA accelerator bays, so you could put a little flash drive in the bottom there that really helps you with small file reads and writes. They offer so many data backup features like the battery backup to cache that prevents write failure or data corruption. Should the power go out, the cache saves it all and writes it all out. You can open the front of these. It's so easy. They're just attached by magnets. And then add drives without any tools. The status lights in the front let you know exactly what's going on, how much capacity is left. I mentioned the 5N2. This is their new network storage device. And this is really awesome. It's high performance. They've upgraded the processor, doubled the performance over its a parent 5N, dual bondable gigabit Ethernet ports. This is the NAS of the future. It is amazing. Five drive bays. You could put standard or SSD drives in there. I like to use those, what are they, the Western Digital Reds, the NAS drives in there, and they're just fantastic. You get some huge capacity. You can, because you can put five drives in there, I think you can get up to 30 terabytes in one of these. 30 terabytes! Power failure protection. Ooh. I know! They support a single smart volume of up to 64 terabytes. But what's great about the Drobos is you can also just throw in whatever drives you got lying around, because the drives don't have to be all the same as they do with other systems. They don't have to have the same capacity. Drobos Beyond RAID will handle a variety. And now, because the 5N2's got all this processor power, the Drobo apps really sing, like Drobo Pix for your photo backup. You can put Plex on there. It's a great media streaming solution. Cloud apps for backup, for data syncing. There's a full LAMP stack. They've got Node.js on there, WordPress for web developers. You're using Angular, you put Angular on there. You could have your whole development stack right there in the house. App developers can use C, Go, Perl, Python, Ruby. There's a Git client. You know what's great about that? Having your own Git client is awesome. I don't just use it for code. I use it for everything. So like if I'm writing a document, I commit it to Git and I can commit changes. I can restore it. I can go back and forth. It's awesome. DroboStore.com, that's where you can buy your new Drobo. But if you do, including the 5N2, you'll save an extra 10% on select models by using the offer code TWIT10, TWIT10, DroboStore.com. And we thank Drobo so much for providing such great hardware and supporting This Week in Tech. I should talk.
Pretty great discount. 10% discount is pretty,
that's significant.
Is pretty solid a Drobo. That's great.
Yeah.
Drobo is the one company I think that should have that whole "we create magic" stuff. Like, you just be hot swapping. It don't matter what kind of drive you throw in there. It just works. Like, for all these, magical. No, that's magic. Magic's when I take something old and something new, mix and match, and it just works. That's magic. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to understand the complexities of the speed, but man, Drobo's be working.
Drobo, I think that's really where Drobo became, and a lot of Mac users, Apple users, are Drobo fans, and I think that's really one of the things that made Drobo in the early days. Remember that, Tom, when Drobo first started?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, this is kind of the magical solution. It was so much better than the other stuff out there. And, boy, having, all that storage online with Thunderbolt, man, it's fantastic.
Every time you swap out a hard drive from your laptop, you just put the older hard drive in the Drobo and just keep it running.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. It's still great. I mean, I know because of hard drives going more to SSDs, right? And so you have smaller drives in your actual machine. Like I said, my wife is a photographer. And so more and more professional photographers, and especially with these faster ports, USB-C, USB-3, they're using Drobo. They're editing on the machine, right? They don't load anything onto their local laptop because it just doesn't have enough storage.
Right.
And all these files are so huge now, right?
It saves you money because you can get a 128 gig SSD as your boot drive, and that's plenty because you have all your data on these external, high speed external drives. That makes a big difference.
And it's so much safer too, right? Because you've got it backed up. If you're working off of a Drobo or an external device like that, you have it backed up. And then you run a backup off of that to the cloud. You're in such
that
a
one
better
drive.
Place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Alex Lindsay's worked like that for years. Yeah. So while I was gone, by the way, Apple has made it way too easy to buy stuff. Because you could just use your fingerprint now with Apple Pay and the Apple Store. I am I'm in the air flying to Miami during the Apple event. I had no idea, and we didn't have Wi-Fi. So wheels down, I turn on the phone, start reading. I said, the 10.5 came out. Before we got off the plane, I had ordered one. Like for $700, I'd ordered one. But I'm very happy I did, actually. First of all, if you just look at it, you're going to say, it's just, it's another, it's got a bit less of a bezel. It's a little bit bigger screen, roughly the size of an Air 2, a little bit bigger. But noticeable differences. First of all, the camera is an iPhone 7 camera, finally. I have mixed feelings about this because I hate it when people use
I
was going to ask, what do you do? Like, that's not even a thing.
Aaron,
don't say that. Put it down.
Smile, OJ. Smile.
Put it down, Grandpa. Grandpa.
At Glastonbury, down in front, holding it up to take pictures.
It's the worst thing at concerts, right? You see all these people with these.
I know.
Get out of the way. However, from the point of view of the photographer, especially if you have a decent camera, and this is the first time they put a decent camera in the iPad, you have the best viewfinder ever made.
It is an amazing viewfinder.
Especially for video. You're looking at real time what it's going to look like. So and then of course so that's one. Two, and you really will notice it only if you put this it's side by side with an older iPad. The screen is remarkably good, and it is so fast. And I know people always say that, but usually the speed increments of 10 or 20%, you really don't notice. This one, it feels like why did they put so much speed into it? So, and I have to credit Rene Ritchie and iMore for this observation. But this new iPad isn't about the current version of iOS. It's not about the current apps available.
Yeah.
This is the fall, and I think this is why they delayed it. This is for iOS 11, where they're going to put more PC-like apps on here, right?
Oh,
you're going to
have
a file manager. You're going to have drag-and-drop files. But also, this is an AR device. And Apple announced the WWDC AR kit. And that's why they have such a good screen, such a good camera, so much power in here. Nothing you can get today uses that. It's all about augmented reality this fall. And I have to say, I really think that's what, if you look at what Apple's released with the 10.5, it's a real strong indicator of where Apple wants to go with the iPad. And they need to go somewhere because nobody's buying these things.
I think it's also a MacBook Air replacement.
I think so too.
Right? Yep. Jason Snell is writing a feature on this for Tech Republic on the 10.5 with iOS 11, the beta installed, and sort of the power to use that as a replacement to a MacBook Air. And I'm sort of not one of the candidates for this, but I know people that are obviously really happy with it. And I'm seeing more and more people with iPads still using them as replacements. And so I think that it's going to be really interesting to see. And so look for that article from Jason Snell, because if there's anybody that I trust to give a really sober but honest and enthusiastic opinion about it, it's him.
Absolutely. Apple's been advertising for a few months now that this is the replacement. The iPad is a replacement for your laptop. And I've mocked that. But it's clear that's where the company wants to go, right? If you were wondering what's the future of Mac OS, I think this new iPad is telling you something.
If you want to go with that, the only thing I can say is it's the most affordable, unaffordable laptop replacement you could get. Because,
it is expensive.
Hold on, give me a second. I'm living out here in the real world. I just came from a family of six. They have Chromebooks. They sold their iPads. They just don't want to be, because the cost is too high. But when you think about it, as opposed to a MacBook Pro $1,500, $700, and I feel like it's a laptop, that's the cheapest Apple laptop you could buy. So in that retrospect, sure, it's a great buy. But I don't know how many people are going to be dropping outside of the bubble and the world that we're living in.
No,
they're
going to
be dropping $800 on that thing as a laptop.
I completely agree with you.
That's a fair
point.
That
Apple's never cared about that, right?
Oh, no.
That's not
no.
what Apple's trying to do. They are, irrespective of price, trying to create breakthrough products. And they've never been tried to help people with the price.
But this is a product that has a problem scaling now. So this is something that they're hoping that might shift that, because, again, like you said, people have iPads that are 3 years old. They still work.
So I think what they've decided is we're not going to try to get those people. We're going to try to get the people buying MacBooks, not because they want to they see this as the future. Is first of all, touch is important. It's clear that I would say that Microsoft, yes, as decent as Windows 10 is as a desktop operating system, is a crappy tablet operating system. It's just not really.
Yeah.
iOS is the best tablet operating system. Even Android doesn't come close. And it's certainly in terms of the app ecosystem, there's no question. But Apple doesn't care. Don't kid yourself. Apple doesn't care about cost. They never have. Look what they charge for this stuff.
I know, but I'm just talking about volume in the world. And
they don't care, though.
You're right. But I think
they've never made a cheap iPhone. They don't want to.
It's not about
people.
No, you're right. It's not a mass market product, Owen. I agree with you.
It's not. I think, but for the people who bought Macs and want to replace their MacBook Air, I think that some of them, not if they're creating photos or video.
I think this is aimed at photographers.
Do you?
Yes.
I mean,
And even Adobe does, by the way. Adobe says our mobile app on iOS will have all the capabilities of Photoshop in the next year or so.
For editing, not for taking photos.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, for editing. Thank
well,
you.
It's an excuse me, but it is an iPhone 7 camera. I mean, that's true. A pretty good
Again,
camera.
How many iPhone 7 photographers are
no,
there?
No, I agree. For people like, Jason's wife, for I took a Windows laptop and a tablet with me on our last vacation. Took 4,000 photos. Did it all in Lightroom on a Windows laptop. I think the next time I could take. Believe it or not, I could take an iPad. I would still want to do raw processing once I got home, but a lot of the, because it's so light and portable, a lot of the triage that you do daily on a big photo shoot, you could do. The only thing that's missing, and maybe there is a way to do this, is I want to pick all my photos, do everything I need to do, and then I want to say, import the raws on the desktop at home and somehow communicate from the Lightroom on the iPad. Yeah. To Lightroom and Photoshop on the desktop. These are the pics. These are the adjustments.
You can flag photos in Lightroom now on the Lightroom app.
See, I think that's going to happen. Yeah,
because I do that.
That's a reasonable workflow. I don't think that's enough.
That is.
And this is so light. And with a keyboard now, I think it does. Look, I'm not going to replace my Windows laptop with this, my workhorse with this. I wouldn't want to. Tom's writes novels. By the way, congratulations on your novel. We'll talk about that in a second. But you probably wouldn't want to write that on this.
No, I don't understand anyone replacing a laptop with a tablet. And iOS 11 is going to do a lot to change some of my objections, which have to do with file system and multitasking and multi-windows, but it's not going to do enough to change my mind. And the Pixel C did pretty much everything that the iPad Pro does with the keyboard and multi-windows, and I never was going to replace my laptop with that either.
There were no good Android tablet apps. I loved the Pixel C form factor.
I love the Pixel C still. I use it every day, but none of these are changing my mind. The tablet is good for certain things, for very tablet-oriented things. I use mine as a prompter. I use it to watch video. When I'm traveling, it's great on airplanes. But I think ODOCT has got it perfectly right. It is a luxury device.
Yeah.
It is something you get when you have the money to spend and can say, you know what? I want to have that nice portable 12, 10.5-inch screen that I can just pull out of my laptop bag. I want to be able to tap out some emails, maybe even edit some Word documents on the go. But it is not, if you have to pick one, it is not the device to pick.
No, and I tell on the radio show every weekend, I tell people, get a Chromebook. That for most people, you should just get a Chromebook.
I'm shooting on a 5D Mark IV and an 80D. You know what that tablet does for me? It gives me a secondary screen to shift my pictures off and make selections and star them. That's what that iPad does.
Well, that's not bad. That's not bad.
It's still good at single function. I do the same thing. I've got an iPad mini that I use. I've been doing some drone photography with a DJI Mavic Pro.
Great drone photography too, by the way, brother.
Ooh, let's see it. Where is it?
Man. Oh, Instagram. Go to Instagram, jason.heiner at Instagram, on Instagram. Yeah, the Mavic Pro, and I use the iPad mini as a viewfinder instead of using my phone because I don't want to tie up my phone on there. And it's brilliant. It works perfect for what it is.
Which of these pictures is from the Mavic?
The newest one, right there of the bridge. I just took that today.
Look at that.
Yep.
Gorgeous.
So that one, and then there's one. Go ahead.
You're a photographer too. I didn't realize that, Jason. Look at this.
Scroll down. He's got one where the Mavic looks like a supermodel. I thought that was the classiest little picture. I'm going to steal it from my own in a couple months when his is old. And purple.
This one?
My photo.
Which one?
No. It's the drone itself. It's sitting on a brick drinking a latte.
It's a picture of the Mavic itself. I turned it into, scroll down a little bit more. It's a picture of the Mavic itself. I've made it like sit down. You can make it look like a little robot.
There it is right
sitting.
There. Right there. Oh,
that's it? That's hysterical.
That's a cool little picture. Look at how clever and creative he is. I'm stealing that.
How much is this? Is their new inexpensive one?
Yeah, the great thing about this drone is it folds up. It's like the size of a water bottle.
Oh, that's right.
It's awesome, and that's why I wanted to use this one.
Did you have a lot of drone experience before you got this?
No, just the ones we've tested, right, in the office and general around.
Because I can crash any drone, even an uncrashable drone.
This one's I almost crashed it today for the first time, but it was like it was super windy at the bridge, and so it just almost blew it into traffic. But I just pushed it up high and then got control of it, and it was
I have
fine.
A pile in my home office that's the place drones go to die. It's got
really
a drone graveyard. It's a drone graveyard. They're all this little like broken wing and stuff, and I can't throw it out because it costs. You know,
or is it a drone morgue? It sounds more like a.
I have that what do they call it? The Bebop drone that was supposedly uncrashable. Like flies itself. First time I take it out, crash it. Now every time I turn it on, it flies sideways. It just immediately flops over. So it's in the graveyard there. But maybe you think this one? You think I could use this one?
Yeah. This one This one has obstacle
avoidance.
Wait
a minute. It's $1,299.
Well, that's for the full pack. Oh, it's like $1,000.
I just ordered one. Mine's going to be here on Tuesday.
I'm crashing a $1,000 prone. It's too much money for one flight.
Just sell one of your iPads. You'll be fine.
Yeah, really. That's
there
true.
There you go.
There you go. Sell an iPad, get a drone.
I've got 32 phones. I only use two. So, I mean, maybe I could eBay one of them. You know what I mean? Just get the drone. And this drone fly. It's like idiot-proof. It'll fly itself half the time.
When we were in the Galapagos, I really wish there were a few places where it would have been so amazing to have a drone. There's something they call Los Gemelos, which is the twins. It's twin sinkholes. The volcano erupted and made a bubble of lava like 1,000 feet across, and then it collapses. And it's beautiful. And I said, did you ever bring a drone? And said, they don't let us. You can't bring a drone in here. They won't let you.
Oh, really?
But if I had this in my pocket and just went...
Go really early. You know what my key is? I go really early to these places because it's golden hour anyway, right? Like 5, 6 a.m. There's kind of nobody there to harass you, especially if it's public places, you know, you can fly anyway. But you know what the great thing is, Leo? And I posted this on a couple of the photos I posted lately. It's almost like having a jib. Like, you don't have to fly way up in the air to get great shots.
Yeah.
You can fly 20 feet up in the air and get shots that you couldn't have. And then move it in like, you know, like a jib does on old school sort of, film, the way film crews do, and you can just get amazing shots that were never possible before. You don't have to do the stuff way up in the air. Those are awesome. And
Jason, I'll start using drones at the beginning of Top 5.
It's so fun. My favorite drone shot is where you do have just like a standard shot and the guy's sitting there, and then all of a sudden it pans back 100 feet, 200 feet.
Yeah.
Suddenly the guy's this little person on a cliff. That's my favorite shot.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you two things. One, Jason, again, I've been wanting a drone, but you suddenly inspired me to do a drone because I'm like, if he could do it, I could do it. I believe in myself.
Wait a minute. What is Jason, some sort of pathetic loser?
I'm giving him a compliment. I break them down to build them up. Leo, just stop.
If I could do it, you could do it. Jason clearly knows what he's doing.
If you could do it, Leah could do it. That's the end of that story. But I'm trying to tell you, Jason.
I'm not offended.
Ordered a handheld system for it. It's called Katana DJI Mavic Tray. You can actually walk around with it, and you'll have a 3-axis camera that you don't have to fly. You can just slide it in, and it's got a mount for your iPad or phone over the top. Yeah. So if you don't want to fly, but you want some ground footage or shots, it has a Steadicam, a Steadihands, so you could use it.
They also have the Spark, right? Which is another.
That's the new one that just came out last month.
Yeah. This is even smaller, right? This is a mini drone.
You can use your hands to fly that one. Buy that one, Leo. You can't crash that.
Yeah, that's like a selfie drone. You know, that's like one of these drones.
Oh, I can crash it. I can crash it.
The challenge has been issued.
How much is this one?
$600.
That one's like half.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's probably a similar camera, right?
It is.
It's not 4K. It's 1080.
It's not as good a
and
camera.
It's not a 3-axis. It's a 2-axis. I'm just up on drones a little bit. I did a little research.
Sounds like you are.
On it, you got your drone coming this
but,
week.
But for that selfie shot, you know that jib shot, it would be fine for that, right? Look at it.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's got the facial recognition.
Fly hands, you don't need a remote.
Oh, it sees your face and it stays on your face.
Yeah, you use your hands to move it. Gestures make up, down, circle.
What?
It'll do a pan off shot just from using your hands.
Like you go like that, and it goes like that. It goes back.
Say this. It takes a picture.
What are you guys, the drone whisperers? What are you? What is this? I feel like This is like the Music Man. You know, if you only...
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun.
At the end of this, Jason and O'Doctor will reveal their new drone sales startup.
Yeah. Okay, and this has a return to home feature? That's important because the first drone I ever flew, and I have to say thank you to Father Robert Ballasier. We call him the Quad Father because he's like the king of drones around here. He said, "Don't the first drone, get it the cheapest drone you could find. It was like a $40 drone because it will you'll crash it. The first drone, and Lisa's saying, wait till we get home. And I couldn't wait. And I put it on the deck and I turned it and I said, fly up. And it flew up. And I go, oh, this is so cool. And then it kept flying up. And I said, no, come back. And it kept flying. I said, come back. Come. And it never came back. It was like a balloon that you let go. It just got to be a tiny speck. And I don't know where it is.
So that was, again.
At least it was only $40. But literally, it did. I need return to home. I need a button that'll say, come back to
first
me.
Thing I'm, first thing I'm doing is I'm putting a tile on it. So at least I can drive around.
Oh, that's a good idea. Although, around here, you got to use a tracker if you don't mind.
Tracker, fine. Tracker it is.
We don't like the tile. We like the tracker.
I'll tracker with a tracker.
Tracker's a sponsor. You know, you probably do need that because when it flew up, I knew, well, eventually it ran out of power and crashed. But I had no idea where. And I just said, I hope it doesn't hit anybody.
It's on the International Space Station.
I don't know where it ended up. I looked around the property. I looked around in the neighborhood. I never saw it again. I thought, I know, it's somewhere, but I have one.
Fell down and killed a squirrel somewhere.
I hope it was light. So I'm a little drone sensitive.
Have we talked about a story yet today besides
no.
What happened today? What have we been doing?
I got a story. I got a story for you. This is a great story. This is a have you ever heard the phrase neighbor spoofing? Do you know what that is? Do you ever get on your cell phone a phone call from your area code, maybe even your exchange? The other day, somebody called me on Monday or Tuesday and said, did you just call me? And I saw his number on the caller ID, 707-971, same as my phone. I said, no, I didn't. But I can guarantee you that was spam. Because that's what they do, right? They use your phone number. And lately, they've been using your exchange. It's called neighbor spoofing. It's illegal.
Yeah.
And I think they got the guy who's doing it. The FCC is proposing a $120 million fine for a Miami man named Adrian Abramovich. Just stick the word allegedly in a few times because I don't want to, you know, allegedly, what this guy was doing is making robocalls. These are marketing robocalls. He was selling timeshares. And what the call would come in, you would answer it and it would say, I'm calling from a well-known name, Marriott. I got that one many times, or Hilton or Expedia, TripAdvisor. And it says, press 1 to hear more about exclusive vacation deals. Then you'd get routed to a call center that had nothing to do with those big name brands where they try to get you to buy a timeshare. TripAdvisor got wind of this. They launched a private investigation. They traced the calls back to Abramovich. He was in Miami, Florida, in a gated community in Coconut Grove. Wow. And they turned all this information over to the FCC. The FCC got his call records in December of last year. They got 3 months. That's all they got, 3 months of call records. In 3 months, he had made $96,758,223 robocalls, more than a million a day.
Jeez.
Every one of them spoofing your area code so that you would go, oh, it must be a neighbor. It must be the school. It must be, you know, somebody important, and you would answer it. And I did the first 20 times it happened. Eventually, I figured out this is not.
So you bought a timeshare?
Well, it's a nice timeshare, and I can't wait to bring
it. I know you just came back from vacation.
It's in a gated community in Coconut Grove.
Just Coconut Grove. I get 5 minutes.
Just admit what happened. You got, and that's what happened. You just came back from the timeshare vacation. We know what happened.
It didn't matter if you were on the Do Not Call registry. He wasn't paying any attention to that. It didn't matter that this kind of spoofing is illegal. He didn't pay any attention to that, allegedly. Anyway, the FCC, after getting those records, has now proposed, I'm not sure what it takes to actually fine him, but have proposed.
So he has 30 days to respond, is what that means.
And that gives him an extra 30 million calls he could make.
Yeah, right.
So what do you think his success rate is? Do you think his success rate is like 10%?
Yeah. Well, but let's say it's 1%. 1% of a million is 1,000 timeshares. Is that right? No, 10,000.
That's what I'm trying to hold on. Let me just,
I got some quants out here. What? How many? Yeah. Do the math. No, they say we can't do it without Python. We need Python.
He could have possibly made about $300 million.
I'm sure he made it.
1% as a timeshare. No.
Yeah.
I need. So let me. Never mind. I'm going to go. Y'all finish the show. I got
to. It's really easy to do, right? You can spoof phone numbers very easily.
You got that fast Windows machine now, Owen. You can probably
do it all day, every day.
I hope this is the end of that, but just so you know, that's the new term, neighbor spoofing. It is illegal. I'm not sure if it's illegal because you're spoofing the call or number, or because you're spoofing it from your area code. Probably both. But the FCC got them. We'll keep you posted on that story. Other Apple news: Apple quietly, without a lot of fanfare, announced a new tier on Apple Music. There's a $99. A year plan.
Just get a discount for paying a year in advance.
Yeah, that makes it a little more than $8 a month. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, you save $20, $22.
Does that mean they're struggling?
It's a good way to lock in business subscriptions.
Yeah,
is that the family plan?
No, and so that's the family plan's $15 a month. So they didn't really announce it. You just have to go to the Apple Music membership and see individual 1 year. $99. Student, by the way, $4.99.
Attrition is what that does.
Right. Yeah. You know what? I see that more and more on subscription sites. They offer a year plan. And that actually, a lot of times I fall for it because it's like, well, it's so much cheaper. And then I never use it, right? But they got you for a year.
Yeah, once you pay for it, that's exactly how they get you. But
only once a year. I love Apple Music. I use it a lot. Changing.
I love it.
Yeah. But you don't think about it because it renews automatically and you forget.
You'll get an email. They always send you an email that your subscription's renewing. So if you're doing it monthly, you get an email once a month. You probably don't do anything about it, but you get 12 opportunities. Yearly, there's only one. So it's much less chance that people will cancel.
Yep. Did you see the video? I have to say, we had John Markoff on Triangulation. Of course, he's retired from the New York Times, one of the great tech journalists. And took a job as historian at the Computer History Museum. Did an amazing interview with some of the original iPhone team members, including Hugo Fine, Knight and Ganatra, Scott Hertz, and then an interview with Scott Forstall talking about the iPhone and Apple. And thank you. Fortunately, Rene Ritchie watched the whole video, and I started, and I didn't get through the whole thing, but he gave us some highlights. So one of the reasons the iPhone exists... Steve Jobs hated a guy at Microsoft who claimed that their tablet PC... Remember the tablet PC? I got one in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Microsoft at Comdex took over the parking lot, put a house there, like out of The Wizard of Oz, just dropped a house in the parking lot at the Las Vegas Convention Center and put these Stepford clone people, like there was the kid in the kid's bedroom and there was mom in the kitchen and there was dad in the living room and they all had these Windows tablets. But it was 2000, so what was that, Windows XP?
Yeah, it was XP.
Horrible.
Yeah.
And Bill Gates was all in, remember, on tablets? So apparently Steve hated these so much, he came into the office at Apple, said, it's all wrong, the stylus is wrong. He said, let's do fingers, let's do multi-touch. And at first they were going to do a tablet. In fact, one of these guys, I think Hugo, talks about going into a room once he was hired for the iPhone team. This was 2005. It goes into a room where the giant computers hook up to this with these big wires to this big thing, this tablet. And they've got it all, the scrolling and everything. They didn't think about phone at first. And the fact that everybody on the team hated their phones made Steve come in and said, could you take the demo, the tablet, and could you make it a phone? Could you put it something you could fit in your pocket? And they did it. So they put the tablet on hold and they started working on a phone. That was about 2 years before the iPhone's release. Apple investigated all sorts of ways. And this was, well, I remember when they were first talking about an iPhone, I said, you don't want to get in this business. These self guys are terrible. Apple talked about buying Spectrum, about doing an MVNO, about partnering. They started meetings, according to the interviews, carriers thought of manufacturers, you know, these guys are the scum of the earth. So they gave Apple pages and pages of requirements. Finally, they got Singular at the time, which later became AT&T to agree.
Yeah, because they were in trouble, right? And so they took and Apple said, "We're going to do it, but we're not going to do, you know, you're going to do it by our rules. But because of us, we'll market it and we'll sell more."
Forstall says Singular execs would keep coming in with these terrible ideas. Like one of them was adding a button for email. Why don't you just have a physical button and you could press it and you'd get your email? And then Scott said, good idea. We'll think about that later. No, blow them off.
They also didn't want to do AT&T really dug their heels in on some of the most important features. One example was one of the Apple execs that was on the team. You know, it was a really small team, the iPhone team at first. I met last year, and he was saying that the whole visual voicemail, Apple was like, look, voicemail is people don't listen to their voice messages. And they're like, let's just make it visual so you look at it like email. And then people will actually look at their voice messages. They're like, a lot of these people can't even figure out how to get their voicemail. And so AT&T was like, no, we can't do it. It's like, it's like physically impossible to do that. And what you want to do isn't real. And they kept saying, no, look, we've demoed it. You know, we've figured out how to do it. And they're like, no, that's just in your lab. And you can't really do that at scale and all of this. And finally, Steve Jobs had to go to the CEO of AT&T and said, look, we're doing this voicemail thing. Just tell your people that, you know, to knock it off. And that's how they got it.
It's amazing to think about the clout that Apple had at this time, that Steve had at this time. They wanted to demo the phone to Singular, but they were worried about cell reception in Vegas. It was in Vegas. So they wanted to use Wi-Fi, but they were at the Four Seasons. And because the Four Seasons had one of them captured portals, you know, that you had to log in through and pay for, they were worried about that whole process. So they called the Four Seasons. Forstall says, I couldn't mention Apple. I couldn't say anything about Steve Jobs. So I pretended to be a Singular executive. I needed to do a demo. Can you make sure the Wi-Fi is free? And the Four Seasons said, well, it's Four Seasons in Mandalay Bay. We can't, you'd have to make it free for everybody in the hotel. They said, good. Could you do that? You're the Four Seasons. You can do it. And they did it. So they did the demo. A couple of days later, the IT guy from the Four Seasons calls and says, can I turn charging back on now? Yes, thank you. You can. I do recommend the video. I've been watching it in chunks. It's fairly long. But and by the way, kudos to John Markoff. It's really great to see him and continuing really in his role as explainer of tech, but I think in a great venue, the Computer History Museum.
Got him to talk about skeuomorphism too.
Yeah. Oh, man. What did he say? Tell me about that.
He basically said, why did you do that, Scott? And not to get too far into it, but he's like, we wanted to make iOS approachable and easy to use. And we thought that would help if people saw things they recognized.
The other day I saw an original iPad, which you can't update. So it had the old skeuomorphic icons on it. And next to mine, it was like, ooh, who thought that was a good idea?
But it's one of those things that, in technology, we evolve and then we think like everything that was before is bad, right? Like and the thing is at the time, it had a good purpose. It served its purpose. And, you know, we moved on from that. But that doesn't mean that everything, was terrible. We have, and some of this is a little bit of an American thing too, right? We're so future oriented that we look back and some of the things that we'd like to laugh at ourselves or the things we did, or particularly we love laughing at others and the things they created that we think are terrible. But you know, those things did, I kind of got what he was saying. It did change my perspective on it a little bit, because I was one of the ones who didn't love all the skeuomorphic kind of things.
It made sense when he explained it.
It did. It made sense that, you know, look, there were a lot of people that could barely figure out how to use their phones. Right. I mean, I remember trying to give people a Windows phone and a BlackBerry and try to say, yeah, find the internet. Or try to make a call, and
the internet was the planetary button in the middle. Come on, bro.
Let's not forget though that take out your phone right now and look at the icon to make a phone call. What does it look like? A handset, something I don't know. Yeah. I haven't used a handset in a long, long time. Right? I
mean, where's the email button?
Yeah, where is the email button?
Yeah.
Although, if you have a Samsung S8, you do have a Bixby button.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is the dopiest thing ever. By the way, I got a demo. Florence Ion was on the new Screensavers yesterday, and she's installed the Bixby beta software that finally gives Bixby, the voice assistant on the new Samsung Galaxy S8, a voice. And so, because up to now, I've pressed the button, wait about a minute, because it really is slow, and it would put up a kind of Google Now style set of cards, your calendar, the weather, that kind of thing. But pretty soon, I guess, Samsung, apparently the problem was they did it in Korean, and she played for me the Korean voices, by the way, which don't sound robotic at all. And somebody who's a Korean speaking speaker in our chat room said that it was very natural, very real sounding. The American voice still sounds a little bit robotic, but apparently it was more difficult for them to get from Korean Bixby to American English Bixby. That, by the way, is the only version that'll be available. It is the only version currently available in this beta. It also isn't really Google Assistant. It isn't really anything like Siri. It's not about the outside world. It's much more about using the phone. But she showed me you can actually say, open this image, crop this image, speak to the phone, and then the phone will pull up the dialogue in that. So it's kind of like an accessibility feature where you could talk to the phone and have it do stuff.
Oh, like I added Windows 3.1 where I could just tell it, read the labels, and it would go from one to another.
Kind of like that, yeah.
Everything old. You know, I just, when I hear Bixby, I want it to have a British accent. Something about that makes me...
Because it's called Bixby? Like,
yeah, something...
Yeah, I can see that.
It should be called Jeeves, and it should sound like Stephen Fry. It's clear. I'm sorry, sir. I can't do that.
Yes.
Perhaps I should check the internet for you today.
Yeah, you know, that's a good phone. Like,
The Bixby button's dopey, but in other respects, it's fine.
It's true. Exactly. I feel like they still are trying to do software. Maybe eventually they'll figure software out, but there's no signs of it so far. Most of the software they do is not good, and they really should. I still feel like they should just focus on making a better Android phone and, you know, tie in hardware, you know, working on better hardware integration. If that button was a Google Now button, obviously you can say, okay, Google, but I don't really like having that thing turned on. And so, but if that was like if that just turned on the Google, the okay, Google prompt, I'd be much happier.
Yeah. And early on people were able to hack it to do that, but I think Samsung disabled that capability, which is a little annoying. You can speak to Bixby. You don't have to press the button. You can just say, hey, Bixby.
And that's not Viv, which Samsung owns. I'm wondering what when the other shoe drops, right?
Yeah. Well, so Samsung bought the guys who created Siri, sold it to Apple, then left Apple, created something new called Viv, which is Samsung bought. My guess is it's not for the phone. It's more for an Echo style device, Tom, I would guess.
Yeah. But you would think they would want it across platforms like Google and Apple are doing.
Yeah, but it's weird on an Android-based phone because you already have the very good Google Assistant.
Sure.
You don't really need it on
this
the
This is
phone.
The problem I have with all of these assistants right now is that even though, I can put Cortana on my iPhone if I want, I can't make it the default. So everything's in a walled garden.
I think they're probably going to put it in the TVs, honestly, probably going to be in the remotes.
That kind of stuff.
And that kind of thing would be my guess, but, you know, we'll see.
Time will tell with all that good stuff.
Do you use, I could just see you ranting and raving at one of these devices. Do you use an Echo or anything like that?
No, I don't like the government in my home uninvited.
They're
so.
Not listening on your Echo. Come
Look,
on.
I might trip and fall and kill myself by accident. Then we got a whole JFK situation. I have my phone and I have all automated stuff, my Nest and my lights and all this stuff. But my phone, I just click a button and I do it. I'm not that fat that I can't just click a button. I have to talk out loud to do it. I can still click a physical button to get the things that I need done. So I'm not an Echo guy. Apple's little speaker is crap. You know, so I'm waiting for everything to be great. So when it's super duper great,
you're gonna be waiting a long time.
Hey, I got time. Nothing but time.
You want, I know what you want. You dream. Want her. You want Scarlett Johansson to talk
oh,
to you.
Oh, if I could get somebody to love me and yeah. to care, oh, then we on like Donkey Kong. Somebody, you know, maybe to go order yeah, me but, some clothes from Bonfeld and I, this stuff just shows up because they care. You know what I mean? Something like that. You know, it'd be nice if somebody did something like that for me. I could appreciate her.
Look, it's amazing. I don't know how you, but your Bonfeld package just arrived.
Oh, yeah.
So,
see,
so obviously. Somebody was now. Listening.
Yeah, there we go.
Do you know, I signed up for Bonfeld a long time ago when they first came out because I loved the idea, and I've been a Bonfeld member for a long time. And so Bonfeld is an online personal styling service for men that helps you find the right clothes for you. And the way it works, I went through this. I think it was a couple of years ago. It was Sarah. It was on iOS Today with Sarah Lane. So that's how long ago it was. You do a questionnaire and they match you one to one with a dedicated stylist who then picks your clothes for you. She'll or he will email you their selections. Mine's a lady. And frankly, I'm glad because I don't think guys have very good taste. That's one, the whole reason I'm doing this. And then you've got 48 hours to change it. This is on the email. And then they and by the way, they have every brand name. They can go through all the brands, all the designers from all over the world. So find just the right stuff for you. They ship it to your door. So you don't ever enter a store. You go through the stuff. You pay for the clothes you keep. Send the rest back. You pay nothing. It's the only styling service that doesn't charge a styling fee or a subscription fee. And so shall I open now? I don't know if this is for you or it might be for me, Owen.
Same. Oh, the style's going to be different. I'll tell you that.
I don't know. Yeah, what would you have in your Bonfeld?
I'm a plaid guy, believe it or not.
No, plaid. Look at this. Yeah, see, I got nice
got my Clark
chinos.
Kent feel going on.
See the nice chinos? Look at that. Oh, this is kind of a nice fabric. And the nice thing is this is in my size, so I don't have to, you know, I could try it on, but and by the way, if I try it and I don't like it, oh, I did say I want some jackets. I'm looking for some new jacket styles. Look at that. That is real. This one I'm definitely keeping. Look at this. This is the Thelonious C. Christopher Knit Nappy Blazer.
Okay, it's Thelonious.
Thelonious. I'm going to look like a monk. No, that's pretty, isn't it? Look at that tweet. I like that. Thelonious
classic.
C. That's a big
that's
brand.
A classic.
That's
jacket.
A classic. Everybody needs to have at least one of these, right? All right, I'm keeping that. By the way, again, you pay for nothing you don't keep. Oh, here's another jacket. Oh, this is nice, too. Oh, I'm going to be very happy. I'm going to be very happy. Let me put the Thelonious on right now while I tell you how you can get Bonfeld. Just go to bonfeld.com/twit. You're going to get you $25 off your first purchase. Get these great clothes delivered to you. Work with a stylist. It is the only service that doesn't charge you a fee for the stylist. You just pay for what you keep. And it makes it very easy. There's a shipping label for the return and everything. Couldn't be easier to return it. The Thelonious C Linen Jacquard Blazer as well. These are both from Thelonious C. And then the Big Star Union Classic Pocket Trousers. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to put this on right now. Bonfeld. I don't know what the name means. But it's easy to remember.
An explosion of clothing.
Clothing explosion.
Are the bomb, and they fell right into your lap.
This is really nice. I think this will look good. I could wear this right now. It'll go with my outfit. $25 off your first purchase. Bonfeld.com/twit. Special offer just for you, our listeners. We thank them so much. I think this is a brand new sponsor. Very glad to have them on This Week in Tech. All right. Meanwhile, my Surface decided to go to sleep. So this is, I'm going to do the thing I like so much, the Windows Hello. It just logged me in because it looked at
that.
Me. Isn't that nice?
I mean, nice. I know it's not that secure. I get that. But it's so convenient.
Super convenient.
Yeah, it's secure enough. No one else in the studio can get this thing to unlock except me. So
hey, guys, I got a story. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You do yours and I'll do mine.
Okay, no. So it was because you mentioned. Sorry, it's a drone story, but it has a point. You mentioned the Parrot Bebop was the one that you crashed,
yes.
The like uncrashable drone.
Yes.
So the Parrot Bebop 2 recently came out, and it has a first person view, an FPV drone. So you put like some goggles on it. But Ant Pruitt just reviewed it for Tech Republic. It's one of the top stories on Tech Republic. If you go to techrepublic.com right now, actually, Ant Pruitt would be a great person for you to have on the show. You would really.
Is she your aunt? Him.
No, his name is Anthony Pruitt, but we call him Ant.
It sounds like a lady. It sounds like Ant. Hello, I'm your Aunt Pruitt. I'm going to stay for a week. All right. So this is, it looks just like the Bebop I have, but they've updated it so that it, you put on the VR goggles. See, now if you really want to get sick, do that. Wow.
Wow. Yeah, but it also, Ant writes about the fact that this has a lot of interesting business use cases too, because it's one that you can use inside. So think about people like architects.
Right, wandering and around. Yeah.
You can run it inside. And so he's got some demos of that.
See,
as well.
I love the idea. You know, when they do drone racing, which is, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. very fast. You have to wear VR goggles. You have to be, the driver has to be in effect on the drone. There's no way you'd be able to pilot it remotely. So they wear VR goggles to do this. I would think that I'd have less trouble with flying.
There's Ant.
I'd have less trouble flying this if I were wearing VR goggles. On the other hand, if I crash, it might really be devastating to my psyche.
It might be imprinted on your brain.
It's like too real, man.
Well, maybe it trains you better that way because you don't want to crash again after that.
Yeah.
It's true.
Can we get into some Amazon topics? I've been waiting to fight our episode with Tom.
Well,
and it hasn't come up yet.
This is the one I wanted to bring up because while I'm in this news drought in South America, I read another story that Amazon bought Whole Foods for $13.7 billion. And again, I thought, what? And I couldn't wait to get back here and ask y'all what you think of this. Amazon buys Whole Foods. Now, there's some wags who said, I don't think this is how markets work, but who said, you know, Amazon stock went up by more than $13.7 billion. So in effect, it was free.
Yeah.
It wasn't a stock deal, though. So
It's not really how it works, but
But it certainly was a good move, at least from the point of view of the market. They thought, hey, this is a good acquisition. Is it? Why would Amazon buy a brick-and-mortar grocery store? Who wants to start?
One had some struggles. Actually, I'll let you know. Yeah.
But Tom Merrick, because apparently Owen J.J. Stone thinks they're going to have a fight.
I wanted Owen to go first so I could just take the opposite of whatever he says.
Oh, that's Owen's technique. Oh, man, a little jujitsu.
That is my technique. That is it. Tom, this is why I don't like Tom. I'm trying to get Tom out of here. Tom, no. But look, this was the greatest deal known to man. Are you crazy? Do you know how awesome this is? Okay.
Why is this a good deal?
Let's hear it.
First of all, Whole Foods, a.k.a. Whole Paychex, has done the marketing research, and they only are in rich environments. Those people are the people that can afford to pay Amazon to deliver and or pick up and or drop off their expensive groceries, because regular people won't do it. So taking an Acme or a ShopRite or a Lion or whoever grocery store is going to help you. This is a national food grocery store, so get coast-to-coast Key West to Key Largo. There's a bunch of benefits.
Key West to Key Largo, that's both in the same state.
What I'm saying.
It sounds good, though.
Don't question what I'm saying. Just listen to what I'm saying.
Okay.
Anyway, it's great for them because they have many markets in certain areas that are affluent areas to test their whole pantry system and food that they're trying to sell.
Key West to Key Largo is like 10 miles.
I said 32 things in 5 seconds. You stuck on Key West to Key Largo. Shut up and listen.
It sounds good, though. I like it. Go ahead.
This is a smart dinosaur. Most companies, Blockbuster, sat there and watched Redbox eat their lunch. They watched Netflix eat their lunch, and they didn't do anything. Amazon is the end-all, be-all of retail selling, and this is a strong foothold coast-to-coast, San Francisco to Miami, that's going to help them expand their grocery brand that they are obviously moving forward to. They're probably going to scale back on the high-priced items, but it's a great move for them, and it gives them a foothold in something that they bought, quote-unquote, on the cheap, they quote-unquote got for free. It's great.
It wasn't that cheap. I mean, that's by far the largest acquisition. The next biggest one is like Zappos for $2 billion.
It's expensive to me. It's cheap to you, Uncle Leo. It ain't nothing but a thing to
that's
you.
True.
You see what I'm saying?
Jeff Bezos, what does he make? Somebody said he makes like $10 million a day. So I guess he could afford it. Yeah,
they had some cash on hand, too, so they could afford it.
Boy, this looks good, doesn't it? I think this is nice.
I don't disagree with anything that Owen is saying. The thing that I was saying about Whole Foods was their profit margins have been degrading.
They've been a little bit in trouble, right? They're not.
They've been fending off a little bit of activist investor pressure. So this was a way for them to make an exit to somebody who can absorb that pressure and not worry about it, because Amazon runs on thin margins all the time. Amazon just made Amazon Fresh again, because they get a presence, like Owen's saying, in all of these different markets, and they get brick and mortar outlets that they can use as distribution for that. The problem is Instacart has a 5-year deal with Whole Foods. So they're going to have to figure out what to do to either break that deal or coexist with Instacart delivering Whole Foods for 5 years. And Instacart's out there immediately saying, Amazon is a threat to every other grocery store. You want to sign up with us right now.
Yep. Is this, though, I mean, it seems like that, assuming that this is a deal about Amazon delivering groceries to its customers, seems like it's less than it really is. It feels like there's more to this than just that.
Oh, more than just that. Yeah. And I think they obviously want to jumpstart the same thing they've been doing with the brick and mortar book retail stores. And there had been a lot of rumors that they were thinking about doing electronics outlets, and they have that Amazon Go convenience store. So they may be, if they can get the kinks worked out, thinking of bringing that kind of technology into the Whole Foods outlets to make them, you know, super high tech places to shop. So, yeah, I don't think it's just about delivery, but that's the big early win for them.
It's funny because Ben Thompson points out in Stratechery, it was only 2 years ago that Whole Foods CEO John Mackey predicted that groceries would be Amazon's Waterloo. So if you can't beat them, buy them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's how I think of this deal. And Larry Dignan on ZDNet has, you know, my colleague, has written really smartly about it. He watches this stuff, and he's pretty skeptical too. He's pretty bullish on it as well. And obviously we've talked about it a lot, but here's kind of how I think of this. There's a real similarity that Whole Foods and Amazon have, in that Whole Foods was struggling because all of these grocers were carrying the same products that Whole Foods carries. A lot of them, not, you know, all of them, obviously, but they were carrying they were starting their own brands to do all of these same kind of organics, clean eating kind of products. And that was slowly siphoning off more of Whole Foods' business. Amazon had its biggest threat. I mean, let's be honest. Amazon is such a monster right now. In the U.S. last year, in the holiday sales, which is when, you know, everybody makes all of their money in the fourth quarter, Amazon owned like 40% of the holiday, you know, gift market. The next closest competitor, I believe, was Best Buy in the low single digits, like 3-4%, right? So,
but who wants to buy milk and eggs and bread online? I don't understand.
Leo,
it's what they're going to do. So their threat, the biggest threat for Amazon, was all of the clicks, the brick and mortar, some of the bigger click and mortar ones, you know, getting smarter about online. They are getting smarter. Their digital transformation efforts are happening.
But Walmart is probably the biggest threat to Amazon, right? And vice versa. Walmart realizes.
Amazon's the biggest threat to Walmart. Yeah, Walmart's throwing a hissy fit right now. Walmart's out here trying to do mafia style stuff. Oh, you shopping at Walmart? Then you don't want to come over here. Like, they're doing weird stuff.
They're encouraging their partners to pull out of AWS and move to like Azure or something else.
Isn't that wild?
That's Soprano stuff. That's mafia.
If you was to want to continue to do business with us, you probably would want to reconsider your relationship with Amazon.
I'm not saying nothing bad's going to happen, but you might not walk again.
Walmart flipped out when they saw this, right? Walmart flipped out because they
so they see this as a threat.
Oh, okay. Big time.
Let me answer your question, because as you know, I am affiliated with local UPS stores, family business, blah, blah, blah. But we get a lot of Amazon pantry orders coming through, and I see them more frequently than not. And no, they're not yet getting their milk
and eggs, but they are getting their noodles, their toilet paper.
No, we order the so-called dry detergent. Goods. We order, Lisa orders from Safeway online. She goes to the website and gets the, you know, chips and soda. What dry goods from Safeway? The guy comes in the truck. You can't tip him. He just delivers it, and it's very convenient. And then for, but I think, don't people want to squeeze the melons? I mean, if you're going to buy fresh food, don't you want to go to the store?
If you're in Whole Food areas and markets, there are people who don't want to squeeze anything. They just want to show up and have their stuff in their fridge, and they've got the money to do it.
Yeah, market, they hire people to squeeze melons for area. Them.
Yes.
You know, actually, we were talking about this on This Week in Google, and Stacy pointed out one of our sponsors, Blue Apron, has demonstrated that you can have a food delivery where the produce is perfect. There is never a bruised anything. It's always better than I would get at the grocery store. It's always like beautiful. And so there is a clear example of, and maybe as people, then you get the confidence, oh, this is always going to be great. Why do I need to squeeze the melon? Let some guy do that.
And not for nothing, some people don't know how to squeeze the melon. They end up with bad fruit anyway.
No, that's really true. That's actually really, really true. I knock on the watermelon, but I don't know what I'm listening for.
I do the grocery shopping in our house, and if I don't, Eileen would just order it. She's like, I don't have time for that. I'm not going to go.
But you do it now, and this is important. You do it as an aesthetic experience.
I do it because it gets me out of the house, and I enjoy walking around.
You're a bad example because your whole job is in your living room.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's a bad example. So it's unusual. But somebody who works 9 to 5 in a real office outside of the place, let me ask you, do you want to go shop? We got a couple here. They work in the finance industry. They live in Greenwich Village. They're the perfect, you are the Amazon dream couple, right? Do you shop? It's hard in Manhattan, isn't it? Oh, they live next door to a grocery store. That's bad. but I have to say, the grocery stores in Manhattan, there's two kinds. There's super convenience stores, right, where they just go in and you can get it. And then there's Zabar's. There's the really upscale, nice, where you want to go because of the experiential. It's an experience. And I think Whole Foods is kind of more on that. In fact, Stacey was telling me about the Whole Foods in Austin. They have like a DJ bar and they have – you know, they have like it's an experience.
Oh, yeah, because that's the headquarters, right? They don't want to knock it out.
Yeah, this gets back though to what Owen was to Owen's point is that Whole Foods, right? Retail this is retail groceries in this case is all about location, right? And Whole Foods has scouted out some of the best locations across the U.S.
Sure.
And
they're the Starbucks of grocery stores.
Yeah. From Palm Beach to Key West. They're everywhere.
There's a logistical angle to this, right? Because Amazon just bought some prime real estate on top of things.
I didn't hear about that. Where did they buy this real estate?
Whole Foods stores.
That's a good question. I remember I watched the movie about McDonald's and the insight that McDonald's had in this movie Founder. The insight they had was, hey, we're not in the food business. We're in the real estate business because we own this very valuable land. Are all the Whole Foods, they're not leasing that property? They own the...
That's what I don't know, how many of them are leased and how many of them are owned. But I know many of them are owned and they have warehouse distribution network. Amazon's buying planes and boats and all kinds of things to tweak their logistical network. But if
Whole Foods couldn't make a run at it, if they're in financial trouble, what is Amazon bringing to the table that changes that equation?
I told you 3 times already. Why is everybody listening but you? They all get it. They have brought Amazon Pantry. They have brought billions of people with Prime.
I'm still stuck on Key West to
business.
Key Largo.
Look, you stay off my coast to coast. Leo, I'm telling you that the bottom line is if you live in New York City and you're in Harlem and you're in a walk-up on the fifth floor, you want Whole Foods delivering your food via Amazon door to door.
Do you go to the bodega? And is that a bodega next to you or is it a nice grocery store next to you? You want it delivered, right? You don't, even if it's downstairs. But the difference is there is an aesthetic experience. And I think that retail, if it's going to succeed, is going to succeed. Whether it's a bookstore, a grocery store, a movie theater, it's going to succeed because of the experience, not because of the products, right?
Well, and Amazon doesn't need the retail to be profitable. To make this worthwhile any more than they need Amazon Video, Prime Video to be profitable.
Well, tell me about that. Don't they want to make money?
Amazon's... Amazon's low margin, first of all. But second of all, as long as it feeds another part of the business. And that's why I say there's a logistical side of this that they might see as being worth it. There's the fact that it might tweak more people to go to the Amazon website and order Amazon Fresh and therefore order more Amazon. I mean, they do all kinds of things that are loss leaders to get people into Amazon.
I mean, Amazon's major business may be, so one of the one X factor in this, because I think that's kind of what you're looking for, Leo, is, and I've wondered and lots have wondered too, is are they going to eventually get in the delivery business, right? Because this is their biggest rising cost. This is the biggest thing Wall Street has dinged them on. And their biggest competitor in China.
Baidu? Has, Alibaba. Alibaba.
Well, Baidu, and there's several
JD.
Of them.
JD.com and yeah.
JD.com. JD is probably the what we would think is more like the Amazon, right? Okay. They 10 years ago, JD made this bet that the markets there hated, the investors there hated. They started their own delivery service. And 10 years later, they look like a genius because they dealt with their biggest cost. But now
sure, that's why Webvan is such a huge success today. We've tried this. Peapod, Webvan, I can go on and on. We've tried grocery deliveries and they failed.
But no, think of groceries as only one part of the delivery thing, right? Right. So Amazon is delivering some people packages almost every day, right? And they've started doing
that's
this
a good point. If the truck's coming to you anyway, you might as well put some groceries in there.
Exactly. Yeah. You have your daily delivery from Amazon. They've already started doing this in some smaller markets.
I'm just going to point out that I'm completely playing devil's advocate. I haven't been out of the house in years. I order everything, including all groceries, online.
I mean, he gets his clothes delivered to him.
And by the way, is this not looking pretty nice? I like this jacket. I think this is a big upgrade.
Very sharp.
Can I ask a question? Why do they sew the pockets shut?
You could clip them open, you know.
Because if you put something in there, you get all rumpy.
It won't fall apart if I clip. Why do they sew them?
They sew the pockets so the insects people like you won't put 32 gadgets in there and ball it up and have you looking like you got lumps in your
mouth. Already, I got bulges all over. Like you.
So you stay slim and look trim. Yes, that's why.
You
can't be trusted, Uncle Leo. That's why they sew the pockets shut.
It's like Frankenstein mouth sutra. All right, so I'm going to tell you what Ben Thompson said, because Ben is a very good, very astute. We actually wanted to get him on the show to talk about this. He'll be on soon. He couldn't do it today. So he was talking about Mackey and how Mackey said, you know, we're going to kill Amazon 2 years later. He said Mackey's misunderstanding is profound. Amazon and Jeff Bezos have their sights on being the most dominant company of all time. Start there, and this purchase makes sense. And what he does is this is really brilliant. He does the company's mission statements. There's three different mission statements. And when Amazon first started in 97, Amazon.com's objective is to be the leading online retailer of information-based products and services with an initial focus on books. Yeah, that was actually a pretty accurate description, right? Jeff was a hedge fund manager who said, you know, he did an analysis on an online bookstore and he said, hey, yeah, it's a good business. I'm getting out of this hedge fund. The real money's in selling books online. Who knew he was right? Then a few years later, our vision is to be the Earth's most customer-centric company, to build a place where people can come to find and discover anything they might want to buy online. The most recent drops that second clause. Mm-hmm. Amazon's current mission statement is very short and simple. We seek to be the Earth's most customer-centric company. Ben says what they seek is to own be the middleman to own every online transaction of all of them. Just to be Amazon's goal is to take a cut of all economic activity.
And that's why I say they don't need Whole Foods to be profitable.
By the way, that's a good business plan.
Yeah.
Let's take a cut of all online activity, all economic activity, not even online.
Well they've essentially, they're doing what Walmart has done in real life online. Walmart loves to go to mom and pop shops. We're like, hey, you sold 3,200 of those hats? Cool. I'll buy your IP. You make me $4 million. You never make a hat for anybody else again. And they just go town to town, shop to shop, buying up everything on the earth. And then they looked up in the sky, and Amazon's looking down like, hey, brother,
You ain't got no wings. We gonna be up here doing our thing. Y'all stay down there and have fun with that.
Yeah, that's why I'm getting at, you know, what Amazon really is a delivery company. They will deliver you anything you want. They will deliver it virtually. They will deliver it physically. And so that's why I do think eventually they either buy UPS or they make their own UPS.
They bought planes, right? Or leased planes.
But I think this is all peripheral, that in order to take a cut of all economic activity,
you also have to be a great online store. You also have to have delivery. You have to have all these parts. But this is the real goal. We want all economic activity to go through Amazon's cash register. And even if you only take 1 cent out of each of those transactions, that's a lot of crumbs.
That's to Tom's point, they don't have to make money on the groceries, right? If they are delivering it, they're going to charge you a delivery fee. Yeah. That's what I was trying to get to.
They sell the groceries at cost. Yeah.
Yeah, they sell the groceries at cost. They charge you a $35 delivery fee. They're making money anyway.
And by the way, notice for a long time, brand was a big deal, right? But notice, like even with this Bombfell jacket, the brands, but it wasn't, I didn't buy it from whoever that was, Thelonious Monk. I bought it from Bombfell. The brand was completely secondary. And I think when we buy on Amazon, increasingly the brand is secondary, right?
Yeah.
It is a commodity sales. And they don't care about brand. That's what the Amazon look, that echo with the screen that looks at you and says you should buy this and this, and those two don't go together. That's all about that. That's all about disintermediating brand and saying, no, you don't need to go to Nordstrom and look at brand. You need to go to Amazon, and we'll figure out what brand you want. You don't need to worry about
for brand. Some things, right? Brand is always going to – buying is not always a very logical thing still.
It's changing. I mean, do you care whether you get Tide or Cheer?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes. I do care. I'm allergic to Tide.
Why do you care if you get Tide or Cheer, Owen?
Look, first
of
all,
one smells better.
No. One is a superior product. One is the little brother. If I got it for free, I wouldn't care.
Would you care if you get Crest or Colgate?
Crest.
I use Sensodyne. But yes, I care.
Yeah, I take it back. I'm wrong about brand, except that you guys are just old and the new generation couldn't care less.
I don't think that's true in China. So in China, again, Baidu was the big giant in commerce. They're still giant, but JD.com has come as that market has gotten more affluent, as more of the people have become middle class. They care about brand. What they've seen there, and I think it's most of them are young people. They care about brand as soon as they have the choice, right? And they're not just going for whatever is cheapest. Then all of a sudden, the story that the product tells and the brand that it's about means more to them than just getting it at the lowest cost. And that's why JD.com is exploding there. And Baidu, you know, is really challenged.
I think you could argue that China is behind us in this regard. There was a good article, where was it? Was it the New York Times? About how people used to show their wealth and status by conspicuous consumption. I've got Louis Vuitton bags. I've got some fancy watch, Rolex watch. And now that's changing because it no longer proves anything to have a Louis Vuitton bag or a Rolex watch. It's not a status symbol because everybody's got them. So now you show your wealth, you show your power, you show your discretion, your discernment by experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that maybe brand is big in China, but that is not necessarily a bellwether. I would say it's the opposite. China is a nascent consumer economy, much like we were maybe in the 60s and 70s.
This is a
mature consumer economy. I don't think brand is important anymore.
I just spoke about the upper echelon 1% of people who can experience experiences of being that. The whole rest of us, the whole other 99% care about having a Samsung TV or an iPhone or a Samsung phone versus an Insignia or RCA. Brand don't matter when you're broke because you get whatever you could get. But if you got a little bit of money, you want a Canon camera versus a Xing Shang camera. Like you're talking about experiences and traveling. Yeah, you get to go on a vacation for 2 weeks at a time, go to lovely places that don't let you fly drones. I get to live through it through your pictures, not the regular people in the world. So, yes, Captain 1%, Louis Vuitton doesn't show that I'm rich because these rappers are just popping up everywhere with them. What are we going to go buy Bali? Let's go buy Bali. Like, it's a small percentage of people above branding right now. Okay. The rest of us, branding still matters.
Owen, always the voice of the people on this show.
That article said that. I saw an article similar on Hacker News. I don't remember where it was from.
Yeah, that's where I saw it too. So it's the same article, yeah.
Yeah.
So it said, ultimately, it said that it was only rich people that care about experience, poor people care about.
Yeah, aspirational people care about brand, and then once you make it and you have money, you don't care about brand as much.
Some people write stuff like, I read those articles that looking at a woman's breasts make you 3 times smarter. That's just the dude that wants to get off right looking at women's breasts. Some people just write stuff to write.
Actually, I just saw on Reddit that a study a study shows that using sex appeal in ads doesn't make your brand more memorable and, in fact, ultimately hurts the brand. But I've always thought that, you know, using sexy ads.
Depends on the sexy ad.
But I'm not letting somebody else squeeze my melons. I'm telling you.
No. I just hope Amazon brings the prices down at Whole Foods so I don't have to mortgage my house to buy groceries.
Luis in our studio audience points out that traffic is so bad. And by the way, this is a funny thing. Wherein you travel, everywhere you go, they say, you know, our traffic is worse than anyone. This is the worst traffic. Traffic is a nightmare everywhere now. And that is a very good reason why you may not want to get in the car, unless you live next door to Zabar's. You might not want to get in the car and drive to the grocery store. It's time consuming. It's expensive in a variety of ways. I think more and more, especially if price goes down, and you're right, Owen, everybody's price sensitive. As price goes down, if Amazon says, look, we're only going to charge you for delivery, the groceries are at cost, you're going to get Whole Food quality at a Kroger's price, and it saves you time, people will give up the idea that they have to go and buy this stuff, and they will take it in delivery. And I think that the evidence is that that's the trend. That's where we're going, and that's what Amazon wants to do, right?
And if they keep it at cost.
Go ahead, Owen, and then Jason.
Just real short. If they keep it at cost, they give the average person the feel of luxury.
That's right.
If an average person can feel like, okay, well, you know, I only make $70,000 a year, which is still high, but I'm making that much money and I don't have to go shopping anymore. I can spend the $35, $25 at my store delivered, and then they feel like they're included in that luxury. And that could be a big boon for that business.
Precisely. Go ahead, Jason.
Also, retail and location do still matter. I think that is, it will matter. It will continue to matter if you're in a good location and people are walking home or, you know, it's on their way home and they, you know, want to just stop and get something, or they want to go in and squeeze the avocado. I love avocados. I'm not getting avocados delivered because I don't trust them that they're going to get them in the kind of
What if one time you got avocados and my God, they were perfect, better than I could ever find. Wouldn't you then use that service?
I don't know if I trust them. I mean,
no, you don't trust them because you haven't experienced that yet. But that's the point. I think Amazon, one of the reasons you buy Whole Foods is because you think you can now solve that problem and convince Jason Heiner that he can get perfect avocados every single time.
It's true. But I do think that also, again, location matters. When I was in New York this week, when I walked by, our office is not far from the Empire State Building. When I walked by the Empire State Building, I looked right across the street and I saw a new thing that said, coming, opening soon, now hiring, Amazon Books.
And I really wonder I feel like more that's about data gathering than actually an intent to create bookstores.
And showrooming.
Well.
And showrooming.
Then that raises a very interesting point, which is that the future, and I think that I was starting to get to this, the future of retail isn't purchasing. The future of retail is experience, showrooming. Experience. You go there, it's an experience, maybe an author reads, you can browse, you can learn, you can talk to people. That's what we're going to want in stores in the future, and everything else just gets delivered to us. I still go to bookstores, but if they don't have the book I want, I go home and I order it on Amazon. It's my secret.
Best Buy is also doing that thing with a startup that you get to rent items for a cheaper cost for a time period. So you get to play around with them before you buy, and if you want to keep it, then you pay for it, but you get to walk out of the door with it only paying a small percentage of what
the item
actually
costs. Doesn't Amazon do that with easy returns? Isn't that
really
in effect
smart.
What easy returns are? Amazon had Zappos is a good example. Nobody wanted to buy shoes. Everybody, has always said, no, I can't buy shoes online. I got to try them on. So Zappos said, no problem. Order all different sizes. Send the stuff back you don't want. Suddenly you're trying it on at home. That has solved the problem. And I think that they've demonstrated people will buy shoes online.
The thing that the Best Buy a physical location is, one, again, when you actually get to go in and pick up the camera versus another camera and feel it and then say, okay, I like this camera. I'm going to buy it and take it home. And then you get that buyer's remorse. You get to take it back in there and actually feel the items you're going to get. There is some
showroom. That's showroom.
With a multiple choice.
That's the idea of showrooming, which is.
Yes.
And in fact, I remember we used to have an advertiser on the radio show, a mom and pop camera store in L.A., very nice one. In fact, Suchat and Keeble, which was the great camera store in L.A., these stores are going away because that's what people would do. They would go in the store, they would try it, they would get all their questions answered, then they go home and they buy it online. And it killed these stores.
Again, that's why location still matters, and showrooming is a real thing. And Amazon, if they're driving people out of business, but those people, those businesses were driving demand for the products that they sell, right? Then they recognize that they have a problem there, and that's why putting a location like an Amazon Books on 34th Street in New York, buying Whole Foods.
Well, it's perfect
to learn more about retail.
If people want a showroom and they go buy from you anyway, that's exactly what you want. The problem was that people would go to Keeble and Suchat, they would look at the camera and then they buy it from Amazon. But if you go to Amazon's Keeble and Suchat store, you look at the camera and then buy it from Amazon, there's no problem. It's kind of sad. This was a 51 years in Palo Alto, one of the great really camera stores. And it's very sad.
It really is sad. It's one of those things like it's natural. It's a natural outgrowth of capitalism, right? Capitalism wants to just naturally wants to aggregate wealth. It's just part of the way the ecosystem works, right? In the same way that in two centuries ago in England they had primogeniture because they were having that concentration, builds jobs, builds communities, yada yada yada. We have the same argument, interestingly enough, right, in free market. But there are a lot of trade-offs with that, and one of the ones in the U.S. right now is that the number of small businesses, as much as we talk about entrepreneurs and we talk about startups and all of that, they've been on the decline for over 20 years.
Oh God! Just go to your local mall if you can find one.
Leo, I live in the suburbs. We got malls over the place. People love malls. Kids love malls.
Yeah, no, but they're dying. They're dying.
They're dying. My malls aren't dying. We out here pimping in these streets. These kids is getting it.
What a Radio Shack, Comp USA have in common? J.C. Penney.
My Radio Shack is opening back up. Sprint owns this. It's a Sprint Radio Shack. They coming back, baby. They're reopening one in my town.
If I can't buy capacitors, it ain't no Radio Shack.
So, true story. Look, I got two things for Uncle Leo. One, the chat room is roasting me about saying 70K is medium. I said it's the high medium, and it's in the area of Whole Foods. Whole Foods is the people that make money, so their medium is like 70K. Secondly, we keep talking about real estate. You know what the cool thing about real estate? Real estate purchasing and getting loans has moved online. Tell me something about that, Uncle Leo.
Well, that's a very interesting question. Perhaps you've heard of Rocket Mortgage.
Oh, tell me about it.
Oh, and J.J. Stone. Now you know why he's on the show, ladies and gentlemen. This man knows how to pitch. Thank you, Owen. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. Quicken Loans, just look at the website. You see all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards year after year. The most satisfaction as a loan originator, as a loan servicer. And now you can get your home loan from Quicken Loans through Rocket Mortgage and do it entirely online. See, Quicken Loans saw this. They said the mortgage experience is not keeping up with the times. It's dated. It's like you're going to the 19th century with some guy with an eye shade and sleeve garters is, like a quill pen. You want a loan? I can get you a loan. I remember this is actually true. 3 years ago when we bought our house, we went to a guy. You have to go to the guy, right? The guy. And he has a sheaf of very like rice paper on a giant clipboard. And he's licking his finger and thumbing through. Let me see what rates I can find for you. That's crazy. We got nowadays this thing called computers. Rocket Mortgage does it all online. You're getting it from a great lender. It's simple. It's transparent. This is important. You understand all the details. You go through it. It's very convenient because they've got partnerships with all the financial institutions, so you don't have to go through boxes of paperwork. You can submit your pay stubs and your bank statements with a touch of a button, a touch of a finger. You could do it on your phone. And whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, they're going to make it easy for you. They do all the it's all done in seconds right before your eyes based on your income, your assets, and your credit. You can choose the term. You can choose the rate. They'll find the loan that's just right for you, and you will get it in minutes. And that's the best part of all. You will get it in minutes. Rock, you could actually do it at an open house and get a home loan approval at an open house on your phone. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Rocket Mortgage at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. rocketmortgage.com/twit and the number 2. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030. That's time for the loan business to get into the 21st century. Lift the burden of getting a home loan or a refi if you're doing that at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. We thank Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage for their support of the show. And I thank Owen J.J. Stone, O-Doctor we call him, for his eagle eye on the bottom line. You know what? This year I may make more than $70,000 thanks to you. I can afford this bomb-filled jacket.
You can go to Whole Foods.
I can go to Whole Foods.
Shop Whole Foods.
As long as I can bring a briefcase and raid the cabinets next time I come out to visit. I'm trying to get you out here giving away my inheritance. So from now on, you keep all old drones, all old phones.
You know what? You want those old drones. I will package them up and send them out to you.
You do that.
You turn them on, they fly. They go like this.
The difference between you and me is I'll put some gum on that thing and we'll be flying in the weekend.
Yeah. By the way,
take a picture of that drone morgue that you've got. I'd love to see a photo of that.
It's funny. It's just like this pile, except for that one that got away. Amazon also this week launched Prime Wardrobe, by the way. Very similar to Trunk Club or Bombfell. And what they do, you get more savings the more you keep. So they incent this. Again, brand? No. It's the brand is Amazon. And that's all you need to know, right?
They are the dinosaur that continues to eat. Other ones sit there and they get upset because, oh, I used to eat meat. Well, Amazon's like, we'll eat everything. Vegetables, nuts, oxygen, whatever we have to do to survive, they do it. And they're doing it so well, it's scary. So, Amazon.
Now,
also getting out in front on AI, getting out front on the cloud.
About the rumor that they were going to buy Slack? Amazon was going to bid $9 billion for Slack, according to Bloomberg.
The day before they buy Whole Foods.
Yeah.
They might. They might still.
Why would you?
My guess is Amazon was meeting with Slack because they want to buy some productivity to add to their enterprise offering. And why wouldn't you meet with Slack? And
right.
All the reports were that they were having initial meetings to discuss things, but that they talking deals yet.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, these companies meet all the time. Like you take that deal, right? You take that meeting all the time. So yeah, I didn't necessarily put a lot of stock into it, but like Tom said, they still could. I think that they want to, obviously cloud software is where they are making most of their money. Amazon AWS is their cash register.
Right.
And, long term, they are probably going to make more money, running things. That's why I think that's a delivery business, right? Whereas I still think that because they're not making a lot of money on retail, I still think of that as like a delivery business, which is why I have to think that at some point they get big enough and they buy FedEx or UPS, or they just start their own because they're really in the delivery business. They deliver information and they deliver goods.
Well, you may remember there was a great book about Amazon called Dogfight. I don't know if you read it. A really good book. And one of the things they talk about in it is how Amazon hardballed FedEx when FedEx said, you guys are getting way too good a deal. You're way below market. We're going to raise your rates. And Amazon said, no problem. We can handle that. We're just moving all our business to UPS. And it was like over. Or might have been the other direction, but it was just over. Amazon does so much that they don't need these guys.
Now, yep. Amazon plays that game where they don't care who you are. They're like, look, we're giving 20% to the post office. We're giving 50% right. to UPS. And then the rest we're shipping off on our own.
I love it that the post office, the mailman comes to me on Sunday, not for mail, but for Amazon.
Yeah.
what day is it today? Yeah.
Sunday. This is when because I guess that a lot of these trucks are contracted out. I don't know what the deal is.
Number,
The number day is the 25th. Today is the day that if you were listening to this podcast and you are listening and heeding the words of Jason, you would go out and buy UPS stock that's only $110 a share currently and just sit and wait. Just go drop 3 G's
Wouldn't
on
you
it,
short
you know
it? Why don't you short it? You think they'll buy UPS?
It's $100 a share. I'm just saying, if you broke, you can afford $100 a share. I sure as heck can't afford Amazon stock price right now.
That's
so
true.
I'm just telling the people, if you got a little
well,
couple
there's a
dollars
risk.
Pocket,
I think
telling me,
there's a risk. You're taking a chance that maybe they'll buy UPS, but maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just set up their own, doing.
Let's put it this way. UPS ain't going out of business no time soon.
It'd be smart to buy the logistics operation of either UPS or FedEx.
UPS is an amazing logistics company. Yeah. They are more and more a technology company, right? Amazon. Yeah. So at some point they become a threat to Amazon. And so taking them off the market, taking a competitor off the market is always, you know.
Maybe. Can we agree that this is just the beginning of a buying spree, that Jeff Bezos is about to go all in, like push all his chips in and say, all right, the time is right.
You read the mission statement, brother.
Yep.
You read the mission statement.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, the stock's cheap right now. That's all. I'm going to get me a couple extra shares. I already got some, but I'm going to get me a couple extra just so.
Yeah.
You never know.
Jim Cramer thinks you're right.
That business is strong, right? However it is. And UPS is based, their headquarters, or one of their big headquarters is in Louisville.
I know.
Louisville's like.
You know why? Because your airport is perfect.
Yeah.
It's like a hub, right?
It is a hub, and that's like half of the traffic at the airport is UPS, and it's also, I think, it's the fourth largest shipping airport in the world or in the U.S.
Is FedEx? Is it Knoxville? FedEx also
it's
has
in
a
Memphis.
Memphis, that's right. Memphis, yeah.
Yep.
So there must be something about that particular area, I guess, because a lot of business is on the Eastern Seaboard. But that's the hub you want. And everything, if you ship FedEx, I could ship something from here to San Francisco. It'd stop off in Memphis on the way.
Yeah.
It's wild. Those are logistics businesses. And I guess I have to think, though, that Amazon also knows logistics pretty well.
Yeah. Amazon buys UPS if they see a piece of technology is easier for them to acquire. That would be my guess.
Buy or build. That's always the decision. Yeah. All right. We haven't talked about Travis Kalanick yet.
I got my shot glass ready to pour a little out for really important Travis.
Uber. Yeah, it seemed for a while there, every week there was a new Uber story. Just unbelievable story.
Groan after groan.
Of course, the story this week. Travis Kalanick, a great story in the New York Times about how the board decided to fire after hours of drama.
We are the board. Resistance is futile.
Mr. Kalanick's exit came under pressure after hours of drama involving Uber's investors, according to two people with knowledge of the situation, and their phone calls and hotel calls and Bill Gurley, who, by the way, he was the venture partner at Benchmark Capital, one of the big investors, has left Uber's board to put another partner on the board. Maybe he's somehow tarnished. But Kalanick was in Chicago. A letter hand-delivered to him says, Mr. Kalanick, time to say goodnight. Now, he's still going to be chairman of the board. He ain't going really anywhere, but he's not going to have day-to-day operational management. Interestingly, 1,000 Uber employees signed a petition saying we must have him back. He's the only guy who can run Uber. But the investors clearly felt that he was more of a liability than an asset to the company. Your thoughts? Tom, you start. Go ahead.
Tom, go ahead.
You got the shot glass in hand.
I think this is a very difficult situation for Uber to be in. They have virtually no C-level executives. They have a committee of 14 people running the company. Travis Kalanick was doing the things that he needed to do at this point. Now, you can rightly say too little too late as far as forgiving him personally, but he was finally saying, yes, we're going to get rid of people. We're going to change the company culture. I mean, Arianna Huffington was right there next to him cheering him on, saying, here's all the things you have to do. And yet that faction of the board said, you know what, we'd just rather have you out of the way so we can pick an adult.
And maybe not that they didn't think the world of Travis or his abilities, but just it was too much of a liability.
And I think what is odd to me is that they didn't have a candidate already lined up after
that
all
is
of this.
Interesting, right? We don't know yeah. who's taking his place.
Yeah, and that will be the telling tale here, right? If they were to get a Sheryl Sandberg, I don't think they'll get Sheryl Sandberg to leave Facebook, but if they were to get somebody like that, that makes sense to me. If they get someone unknown or someone who doesn't have a proven track record, then that makes not a lot of sense at all.
Yeah, and in fact, you're right. What it would have made sense is to go out and talk to a Sheryl Sandberg or to... I'm sorry, let me... I hate autoplay video. Thank you. Or go out and talk to Susan Wojcicki. She's been floated as a name CEO of YouTube.
Yep.
Maybe a guy... Maybe somebody like Alan Mulally, another person whose name has been floated, former CEO of Ford, who is currently, you know, just kind of hanging out, not doing anything, and a smart guy. And if you think that self-driving vehicles are important to Uber's future, might be a good choice. Wouldn't you go and talk to some of those people and say, look, we're gonna boot Kalanick?
Yeah.
Maybe
because the reason you get rid of Kalanick, as far as like just brass tacks, if you're the board, I think you get rid of him. Obviously not to please the employees because you've got a bit of an employee revolt going on, but because you want to polish it up for the IPO. You don't want to have this in the way for the IPO.
And regulators.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, you got to consider government issues. I mean, Uber's been fighting the government since day one, local government.
They obviously considered him a toxic asset, you know, at this point. And so he had done a lot. His obviously super aggressive. He is the one that made Uber and for better and worse. And they have a lot of stuff they need to clean up and clean their house. And they just decided that he wasn't the one to clean it up. Like, he's the one who created the mess. Having him clean it up, you know, probably doesn't work, is essentially
and with him
what the
owning,
board decided.
When he owns the majority of voting shares, the only way you convince him of this is to say, we need to bring in a caretaker CEO who's going to guide us through the IPO and make that really profitable for you, Travis,
and
so it's worth
ideally,
it to step aside.
Ideally, a woman, right? Because if you bring in a woman, then you can maybe get rid of that, shed that bro image.
And then maybe you even say, Travis, we'll bring you back after the IPO a year or two later.
CNBC looking through some possible candidates. Ursula Burns, former CEO at Xerox. She retired in December. Megan Smith, of course, who was at Google and is currently I'm not sure what she's doing now. She was CTO, U.S. CTO under Barack Obama. I guess she's gone her last job ended in January. Don't know what happened. January 20th, something happened, and she's out of work. By the way, formerly partner of Kara Swisher. John Rubenstein, ex-CEO at Bridgewater, world's largest hedge fund. I'm not sure. I think, Adam Bain, former COO at Twitter.
Right? Remember, Ruby was good. At Apple. And
they're good IPO-related.
Howard
hires.
Schultz, Starbucks. CEO?
Alan Mulally would be...
That's a joke. Nobody's going to hire Scott Forstall or Tony Fidel. I mean, they both have kind of contentious reputations from Apple.
They'll hire Marissa Meyer before that.
Marissa Meyer's available.
Yeah. Alan Mulally would be great.
I like Alan Mulally. I really
do. He's terrific. I don't think they'll get him out of retirement. I'd be shocked. But if they did, what a coup. You know
who else was at Ford and is currently looking for work? Mark Fields.
Yeah. I don't know.
Can I hop in here?
Right
We're daydreaming about CEOs. One, good riddance. Two, whoop-de-doo, 1,000 bros spoke up on his behalf. I'm sure there's close to 1 million Uber drivers, so that's like 0.100 minus negative ooh percent. I'm just like, this dude can't be trusted to right the ship because he's just running around throwing gasoline on everything and his hands are on fire. Like, the dude needed to
be never gone. Got better, even after. And by the way, credit to Susan Fowler, who wrote the blog post that brought Kalanick down, complaining about her year as an engineer at Uber, where she was not only sexually harassed, but her complaints to supervisors got ignored, got poo-pooed. They say, oh, yeah, that guy, he's a nice guy. It's the first time this has ever happened. And she'd find out later there was happened 20 times before. It was just a mess. Susan Fowler's blog post, I think you can directly attribute it to the fall of Travis Kalanick.
And this is just a bait and switch to get you to not look at the ship still being aflame, because the culture at the top core is still the same. You get rid of him, but the people who allowed it and accepted it are still there. So, I mean, they've got a lot of restructuring to do, and they've got a lot of things to do for me.
They've gotten rid of almost the entire top level.
There were more
scandals to come. Apparently, Kalanick knew that Lewandowski had stolen intellectual property from Google.
No, Lewandowski said, I have a couple of discs worth of Google stuff, and Uber said, great, keep it to yourself. We don't want to know anything to do with it. We don't know what was on the disc.
What we don't know is if they said, keep it to yourself, we don't want to know, or keep it to yourself, we don't want to know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Do know is Uber is now allowing tipping.
They've always allowed tipping. This is, by the way, has always pissed me off. I feel guilty because I, for years, took Ubers because I somehow got the impression that they
wouldn't let their drivers tell you that tips were allowed.
Yeah, and then I found out because somebody sued, right? Some driver sued, and I found out, oh, so now I tip, but now finally they're putting it in the app.
In the app, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, some regions.
Sakani Wright does a column at DailyTechNewsShow.com called Your Private Driver from the perspective of an actual driver for Uber and Lyft. And he's very happy about Uber putting this in. He's like, do tip your drivers when it's appropriate, when you get good service.
I always tip them.
He said, we don't see the amount until after we've rated you. So don't worry about if you don't tip, you're going to get a bad rider rating. So this is a big deal for the drivers.
Yeah. I take Uber and Lyft a lot. I talk to a lot of the drivers too. And I think that, you know, by and large, and because of the smell test with Uber lately, I always take Lyft when I prefer to. That said, we have to keep the big perspective in mind, in that Uber has over 50% market share in this market. In most places, Uber is a verb. Most places don't hear about any of these stories or hear very little about them. And 5 years from now, it's going to be one of those things where if you ask somebody on the streets, they're still taking Uber and they're going, yeah. And you ask them, like, what did you think about the whole CEO thing and their new CEO and all that? Like, oh, yeah, didn't like the founder a few years ago, they replaced him with somebody else. And they're not going to know. Right. All they're going to know is they got a much better way of taking it, getting a ride than they used to.
Hey, Jason, in 5 years, you're going to be in a car with no driver. You won't be able to ask a question.
Well, clearly that's the only thing would actually save Uber, Lyft, and all these guys as a business. Because what I didn't realize is how much of that cost of an Uber ride is subsidized by the company. I mean, I knew that they were losing money hand over fist despite massive revenues. It turns out 41% of when you take an Uber, you pay for 41% of the cost. The company pays 59% of the cost. That's why they lose money like crazy. Uber rides, and I presume this is true of all of these ride-sharing services, are highly subsidized. So they can't survive with a driver economy. They can only survive in an autonomous economy.
The problem Lyft is that's a lot better because Lyft isn't spending as much money as Uber on a lot of this stuff.
They're cutting each other's throat to try and get to a lower price for fares, and it's not really helping the drivers that much either. It's like a payday loan.
Every time I talk to an Uber driver, it's a mixed bag. On the one hand, they like it; they can make money on their own time and all that stuff. Almost all of them drive for multiple companies anyway, but nobody loves Uber, I don't think.
Yeah,
nobody who works for them loves them except the bros. By the way, this is not unique to Uber. This week, we also learned that a venture capitalist. Justin Kaldbeck at Bain Capital and Lightspeed Ventures, who then started his own firm, Binary Capital, had been harassing female entrepreneurs who'd come to him for funding or advice. Six women have come forward now. He's stepped back. I don't know the name, and I guess he's not that well known outside of VC, but his firm had raised $300 million. They're holding off on their next round because, well... He's taking more time to be with his family, and he says he's going to undergo treatment. But it doesn't. We keep hearing these stories, right? There is something going on in Silicon Valley. There is some sort of bro culture.
There's something that goes on with. There's something that goes on with powerful rich people.
Yeah, because it's look at Fox, right? I mean, it is. You're right. Yeah. It's not. Look at me. Look at me.
Once you're at the top echelon, it's this tale of time.
I'm the boss. You're the secretary. Do you want to get a position and not be a secretary? Well, I'm going to see what you'll do to get that position.
You know what?
And these people sit out there in Silicon Valley have
the
so
problem
much money
is men.
To burn, and it's free money.
Yeah.
They just burn it, blowing it, acting crazy, losing their minds. And all these old dudes thinking they're special. You're not special. You're out here messing with these women, messing with people.
It's not okay.
Slap yourself.
And this guy's going to get off with an apology. Oh, I'm really sorry. I'm going
to
step away.
He's going to go to therapy.
Yeah, he's going to therapy. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Anger.
Supreme Court. Let's do a couple of, we're going to take a break. Let's do a couple of Supreme Court stories, then wrap it up. Because I know, Tom, you got to get out of here in a few minutes.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Tom Merritt, DailyTechNewsShow.com, at Ace Detective. You got a hot date? You're going out to a show, theater, taking Elaine to a fine restaurant?
No, I'm doing another podcast.
Oh, okay. By the way, it's Eileen.
Nerd,
I just call her Elaine because it drives her crazy.
It's a tradition now.
It's a tradition. I called her Elaine from day one. I don't know why.
You did. I don't either. Too much Seinfeld.
Too much. That's it. Also, Jason Heiner from, I've never called his wife by any other name. Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. Great to have you. Always a pleasure.
Yes, sir.
And Owen.
A pleasure.
There he is. What are you doing?
I'm here. I don't. Oh, my camera must have froze. Hang on.
Okay. The disappearing Jason Heiner. He's invisible. The
invisible
He's
Heiner.
Wearing that cloak. The invisible Heiner. And
I'm taking off the invisibility cloak.
J.J. Stone. Oh, doctor.
Come on, Eileen. Oh, I swear. At this moment, whatever the song goes, that's how you got to remember her name.
Secondly, I used to sing that to her, and she practically hit me.
Oh, she does not like it, but that's how you remember her
she
name.
Likes
she
likes
the
song.
She does not like it.
She doesn't like me singing it.
She doesn't like you singing it. Speaking of dinner, Uncle Leo, you know what you should do?
You know what I made the other day? Oh, it was so good. Cannelloni, spinach cannelloni, and then we had a lovely shallot and lemon dressing on our cucumber salad. It was so good, and it was a Blue Apron. I've got
that's
waiting
a blue
for me.
Apron
I've
let you it was give a blue apron. Meals. You should gift me a meal.
Oh, it is. Well, I can get you three meals free if you want. I'll tell you how to
do that. That's even better. That's even better.
I'll tell
you
how to do that. Blue Apron, we were talking about it earlier. They've really demonstrated. This is why they're the number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country. They've really demonstrated that you can deliver people amazing produce and meats and just fresh, no frozen, in a refrigerated box with a recipe card and make people a better cook. Every time I cook Blue Apron, we do about three times a week, I go, this was easy. I could do this again. This cannelloni, I now know how to make cannelloni. It was so good. I made the sauce. They sent me a lovely can of Marzano tomatoes from Italy. It was so good. Blue Apron, get cooking today. You can choose the meals you want. In fact, let's go to the Blue Apron menu, see what's on the menu today.
Is that salmon?
Yeah, salmon and cilantro lime rice with peach corn salsa. Fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn and cubanelle pepper. Don't know it, but I bet it looks good. Oh, it looks good. I bet it tastes good. They have vegetarian meals, summer squash and quinoa burgers with spicy roasted carrots. So you're going to choose three of these meals. This is the two-person plan. They also have a family plan. By the way, the family plan has ingredients that are kid-friendly, and there is nothing like making a meal with your kid. Fontina cheeseburgers with rosemary oven fries and basil aioli, or Asiago cheese and purple potato pizza with marinated peach and arugula salad. Damn, this looks good. And there's nothing like making a meal with your kids to get them excited about cooking. They get invested in it. It is really, really fun. The two-person plan, Lisa and I had leftovers almost every time we share it with Michael. You could probably really get three people on this. And it's very affordable, less than $10 per person per meal. In fact, it costs you less than the grocery store because no brick and mortar. They don't have to maintain a big outlet. It is the best way to get seasonal recipes, pre-portioned ingredients, everything you need to make delicious home-cooked meals in 40 minutes or less. And there's no waste. If you need a lemon, you get a lemon. You need two ribs of celery, you get two ribs of celery. So I love that. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. You choose the menu so you can customize it based on your dietary preferences. It is delicious. So all I'm asking is go to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu. And we're going to arrange three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental United States. Blue Apron. .com/twit. I can't tell you how much I just love Blue Apron. And every time I come home and the box is on the door, I go, wait, Lisa chooses the meals. I cook them. It's a good, she sometimes cooks them, but a lot of times I like to cook them. I say, no, let me, she'll help me with it. so much fun. You know, that's another good thing for a family or a couple to cook together. It's so much fun. All right, I don't know what's going on with Jason. We're going to work on getting him back. I think we're pulling up a still now. Maybe this
mugshot.
Mugshot. Maybe this is just time to call it quits. We got to let Tom go anyway. Tom Merritt's got to go do another podcast. Do you want to tell us what it is?
Rob Reed and I are collaborating on a podcast in support of his forthcoming book, After On. It's a story about AI and quantum computing set in the Bay Area and Silicon Valley. And so we're doing 8 episodes where we talk with experts about the real ideas that underlie the things that he put in
the
book.
What a good idea. I just got my copy, by the way. Thank Rob. He's been on the shows before. In fact, he was on Twitter a few weeks ago talking about After On. So that's a great idea for a show. I love that.
Maran Gribitz, who is a CEO of Meta, talking about augmented reality. Adam Gazelay, who's been on the cover of Nature. He's a neuroscientist talking about the way to hack your brain. And all kinds of good stuff. We're going to try to get Nick Bostrom. Kevin Kelly's going to be on.
Oh, fun.
So, yeah, it's just and Cindy Cohn from EFF.
So is this the first episode?
Yeah. So we're going to be launching it, I think, around mid-July. Keep an eye out.
Okay.
You can go to after-on.com and Rob will keep you up to date. It's just going to be good conversations about real concepts. And then I love his story. His story is great.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And you and I are both on the audiobook, which is going to be
that's right.
Really
I forgot.
Cool too.
I forgot I did that. Yeah. I'm the San Francisco Chronicle on it.
Right. And I'm Ars Technica. No, wait. No. Is that right? Yeah, I think so.
And then Tom's novel is out now, right?
Oh, yeah. You can get that right now. It's called Pilot X Time Travel Story, available wherever books are sold.
Very nice. Pilot X. How is that? Do you like writing better than you like podcasting, or do you need to do both?
They're about the same. Yeah. You know, I like podcasting when I want to chat, and I like writing when I want to be alone.
See, I think podcasting spoiled me for writing because it's so easy to talk. I can no longer write. It's like too much work. I just want to talk.
Yeah, but that's why I write fiction.
Ah.
Because podcasting is kind of my nonfiction side.
Got it. That's smart.
Yeah.
Every time I write fiction, it sounds stupid, so I stopped.
That's why I got to keep doing it. Mine started stupid, and now it's less stupid.
No, I've always liked your stuff.
Writing until it's no longer stupid.
Yeah.
Tom, great to have you. Thank you for joining us. Give my regards to Rob.
Thanks, I will.
All right. DTNS, thedailytechnewsshow.com. And of course, don't forget to follow him. The most memorable Twitter handle ever, ACEDTECT.
If you'll work hard enough to spell it, you'll hopefully enjoy it.
Great to have you, Tom. Good to see you again. Thank you, Jason Einar. He came in at the last minute because
I made it back.
Our scheduled guest, Ashley Esquetha, got laryngitis. She'll be back, but Jason's always great to have you on, Editor-in-Chief of Tech Republic.
Absolutely. When you said back, I thought I dropped, and now I'm back. And so I'm too.
We got you back for that, too.
Books, I want to plug my book because both of you and Tom are in it. And so for fans of Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte, Follow the Geeks, you can read their stories in full, along with the stories of many other amazing, amazing people.
It's the closest thing I'm ever going to come to having a biography. So, folks, read chapter 10. It's highly recommended.
Audible, too. There's on Audible. I was the co-author of this book with Lindsay Gilpin. But in the Audible book, I actually read the audio book. And the sample chapter is the beginning of Leo's chapter as well.
That was nice of them.
Yes.
But don't think you're getting the whole thing. You got to buy the book.
Yeah.
It's so great to have you on, Jason. Thanks for joining
us. People who bought Follow the Geeks also bought Rob Reed's book and mine.
Excellent. Look at that.
All in the family.
Isn't that weird?
All in the family.
And Daniel Suarez.
And Daniel Suarez, I know.
And Nick Bilton. And Stephen Levy.
That's Nick. I didn't even see that.
Look at that. What is the thread that ties all of those together? I ask you.
Nerds.
And by the way, this guy, Brian Merchant, author of The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone, he's going to be on Triangulation in a couple of weeks. So, I'm just saying.
Yep. One connection is you, Leo.
I wasn't going to say it, but thank you. Owen J.J. Stone actually is the single connecting thread that holds us all together. He is, in fact, the person that created the universe.
I believe that's true. Secondly, just to a whole bunch of stuff. One, Jason, if I get you on DocTales, and that will be a threat. Because Leo's been
Jason,
on DocTales.
Don't do it.
Tom's
don't
been
do
on
it.
DocTales.
He pulls stories out of you that you thought you'd long forgotten, that you never wish anybody heard. He got Georgia Dow's real name out of her.
And then we put it on the internet. And I was hoping to get into a tweet fight with Tom, because Tom is one of those people. I love and dislike Tom more than anything. I consider myself one of the wittiest, snappiest people in the world. And Tom operates like two times faster than me. It's kind of like, you know, I can't deal with somebody who's more Key West and Key Largo faster than me. I can't stand
Oh, doctor,
Tom
we are all occluded in Tom Merritt's shadow.
It's sickening about the way Tom Merritt is. And anything you talk about, Tom knows three things from history, 1984, 1776. Did you know that it came in four parts? Tom makes me sick. But besides not me loving, hating Tom, I love Tom. Tom knows. I'm going to just tell y'all something about the internet, okay?
Yes.
A lot of people that are in tech listen to this show. And if you're living out in bro country, stop being a bro. We were talking about the Uber thing. We kind of breezed by it. But I have a daughter. You have a mother. Everybody who listens to this has a mother. If you see somebody being a bro, if you're in a hedge fund, tech fund, startup, and you see these dudes acting crazy, first thing you do is check them. Go to him and be like, yo, dude, she's got a job to do. It's not cool to do that. Then secondly, maybe you check with her if he continues to do it so you can support her when she goes to HR and they ignore her so there's a man standing behind her. Because you can't just accept that culture and live in that world and spend all that money and let people do what they want to do and get away with it. It's not right. It's wrong. We talk about these things over and over and over again. And we have to hope to Jiminy Christmas somebody listens to a woman. There's too many men working in these environments, not backing these women up, and it makes me sick. That's what I wanted to say earlier, but I tried to calm it down, but it just made me mad the longer I sat here. I love you. Love the show. Thanks for having me on.
That is nice. Internet. That is nice. IQMZ.com. And don't forget DocTales. Just whatever you do, Jason, don't go anywhere near that because the guy will pull stuff out
Come
of you.
Come on, Jason. I need your social. I need your social, Jason.
Owen Doctor, JJ Stone, absolutely. Jason Heiner. Tom Merritt, bless you all for being here. Thank you so much. And thanks to all of you for being here. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That would be 2200 UTC. If you want to come by and watch live, join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. We would love that. We also love it having a live studio audience. We got a great studio audience this week. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. We'd love to have you come by. But, of course, if you can't make it in person, if you can't make it live, you can always do it wherever at your convenience, in the shower, in the car, anywhere you are. Just download a copy. You'll find it at twit.tv. All our shows are on demand, audio and video, so you get to pick the format you like. And if you do me a favor and subscribe, that would be great. Use your favorite podcast application. Subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. We appreciate it. Thanks for joining us, and I'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody.
Doing the Twit.
All right.